the week. Coming up after the news, on a surfboard, Sir Ed Davey here taking your calls. I'm done for the week. I'll be back Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thanks, Nick. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, standing in for James O'Brien. Later on, I want to talk about care and the families looking after loved ones and ask, what don't we get right about carers in Britain? I think Keir Starmer is too soft on President Donald Trump. If Starmer toughened up a little bit, we'd get a better deal for our country. Do you agree? But first, I announced this week that I'm not taking up my invite to the banquet for Donald Trump's state visit. And the reason is, I think we need to put pressure on him to do what only he can do, to stop the killing in Gaza, stop the famine, and get the hostages released. Have I done the right thing? Call me on 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Health Minister Stephen Kinnock has told LBC that anti-vaccine conspiracy theorists must be defeated. A free chickenpox jab will join MMR in the childhood immunisation programme in England and Wales from January. But new figures show vaccine uptake remains well below target levels. Mr Kinnock says the government's working with GPs and schools to tackle the big problem.
There is a lot of disinformation and misinformation out there. People going on social media and talking rubbish about vaccines, that is not helping. We are looking to combat that.
Israel has reportedly declared Gaza City a dangerous combat zone. Officials say a tactical ceasefire of military activity for the distribution of aid will no longer apply to the area. The IDF has been implementing the pauses to allow for supplies to be handed out. Judges are set to rule in the latest stage of a legal battle over an asylum hotel in Epping. The Home Office and the hotel's owner are seeking to challenge an injunction banning its use for housing migrants. A decision will be announced this afternoon. Ministers have told a contractor to stop advertising for certain jobs at an immigration removal centre near Heathrow. One job description for an arts and crafts tutor included responsibilities for teaching floristry, cake decorating and balloon craft. The government says it does not believe the roles are necessary. A suspended Labour MSP has been charged over allegations a secret camera was placed in toilets inside the Scottish Parliament. Colin Smith's security pass was deactivated by Holyrood authorities yesterday. He lost the Labour whip earlier this month after being charged with possession of indecent images. Ministers are facing growing pressure to protect the creative industries from artificial intelligence. They've been accused of legitimising wide-scale copyright theft by failing to stop AI firms scraping content. The Musicians' Union says it's becoming an existential threat. Violinist and Classic FM presenter Nicola Benedetti says tougher regulations are needed.
I think we will adjust. I do believe that artists will fight that case eloquently, but we also have a history of artists being used and abused, and it's just gonna be a fight that we have to keep fighting.
The government says it's firmly committed to ensuring rights holders are compensated fairly. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading down 6 points at 92.09. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers for most places. Some of that rain will be heavy with the odd rumble of thunder. A high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ed Davey.
Good. Good morning. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, standing in for James O'Brien on LBC until 1 o'clock today. I'm the Member of Parliament for Kingston and Surbiton in South East London, but I'm the leader of the Liberal Democrats, and I want to talk to you about issues close to my heart. First of all, at the end of the show, or the last hour, I want to talk about carers. I think family carers do amazing jobs, and I wonder about how we can help them more, and I want to hear about your experiences and your ideas. Then at the middle hour, I want to talk about Trump, Donald Trump. Particularly, I want to see if you think Keir Starmer's approach to Donald Trump is the right one. You know, he's cozying up, he's trying to get a deal, he's trying to be nice to him. Do you think that's the right approach? And I'm going to explain why I'm not so sure. But I want to start the show by talking about Gaza and a decision I made this week not to go to the state banquet for Donald Trump, because I think he's the person who can stop the famine, the devastation, the conflict in Gaza and get the hostages released. And I want to talk about that. I want to hear your views. So do call in and let me know what you think, and particularly if you disagree with me, frankly. But let me start by telling you why I came to the decision, because I've actually been wrestling with it over the summer, because an invite to a banquet at Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle is a great honour, and I've been really privileged to be invited 6 or 7 times in the past, and always enjoyed them. They're good fun, it's a good grub, it's a real honour. And I wanted to go, and indeed I actually suggested that we have this state banquet for and state visit for Donald Trump, because, you know, I think it's a way to influence him. And up until the beginning of the summer, I had every intention of going if I was invited. But do you know what? Over the summer, particularly seeing the images coming from Gaza, the children starving, you could see their skeleton, the lifeless bodies of children killed where they're queuing just to get food and water, and the emaciated hostages, which the appalling terrorists put on the TV. You know, I thought we've got to do something. And the person who actually can do something is Donald Trump. Now, he's the only person, I think, who can both talk to Netanyahu and get him to let the food in, get the food aid in, stop the attacks, and also pick up the phone to the Qatari government and the other Gulf states who have influence on Hamas to get them to release the hostages. So he's the only person who can do this. And he's coming to our country on a state visit next month. And at that state banquet, I wouldn't get to talk to him. You don't at those things, not in my experience. But by making this stand, we can get the debate going. We can hope to put pressure on the government to do the right thing and put pressure on Donald Trump. You know, the truth is, at the moment, he's just giving Netanyahu his full support. He says he's stopping all these wars. I think he said he stopped 6 wars, didn't he? Don't think he has, actually. He claims he can stop things. He claims he has this power. And actually, US presidents in the past have been very influential on everything in the Middle East. And I believe he could do something. And that's why I think when he comes to our country, we should be debating this. We should have it in the media. I'm delighted, actually, people, even if they haven't been agreeing with me, have been talking about this decision. And I hope that when he comes, and during his visit, before and after his visit, we all agree as a country that actually he's the person who can take action, and actually our government should be saying that loud and clear. I hope that it could make a difference. I don't think, by the way, he's going to take much notice of me individually. I'm humble enough to realise I'm not sure anyone who's leader of a party with Liberal and Democrat in the name is going to appeal to Donald Trump. But if we can get our government to do the right thing, if we can get the media to cover this point, this man has that power. And, you know, as we speak, you know, the tanks are lining up to go into Gaza City. There's 1 million civilians in Gaza City, and they face being forcibly removed, having to go, and a lot of people being killed, and the famine getting even worse. So if you care about that, if you care about the lives of the hostages still there, I think we've got to send the strongest message to Netanyahu, and the person who can do that is Donald Trump. Now, I have to say, it was not an easy decision. You may disagree with it. There are people who've disagreed with it. In fact, there's a person who was in this chair yesterday, the Conservative MP and former Foreign Secretary James Cleverly. He'd have actually got an invite to the state banquet if he could count. And if you remember, he was standing to be the leader of the Conservative Party, but he's got his numbers wrong and he didn't quite make it and didn't beat Kemi Badenoch. So he'd have got an invitation, but his maths weren't up to it. However, on this issue, he was having a go at me yesterday, and this is what he said.
Sir Ed Davey has decided to boycott the state dinner with the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump. I'm sure that President Trump is currently sobbing, thinking of what could have been his opportunity to speak with the leader of the Liberal Democrats, an opportunity to denied now because of the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Edward Davey, boycotting the state banquet. If you detect a degree of cynicism or mocking in my voice, well done you, because I think this is the most foolish of performative gesture politics. Diplomacy is not about only talking to people that you agree with, it's about talking to people you disagree with. And I know that Sir Ed Davey has got deep disagreements with Donald Trump. I respect the fact he has disagreements with Donald Trump. But when you disagree with someone on the international stage, talk to them. Unless, of course, you don't think you have any influence. And if you don't think you have any influence, frankly, what on earth are you doing in politics?
No, I respect James Cleverly. He's one of these guys, actually, who I think people across Parliament, all parties, actually get on with. And, you know, I like his tongue-in-cheek comments there. But you know what? I strongly disagree with him. And I think he knows that at these state banquets, you never get to speak to the visiting head of state. Having been to six during these banquets, it's 150 or more people sat down at a table, and unless you're on the top table, and I wasn't invited to be on the top table, let's be clear, you don't get to speak to not only the visiting head of state, in this case Donald Trump, or any of his senior entourage. So that I wouldn't have been able to speak to him at the state banquet, so I think James probably knew that. In terms of diplomacy, I sort of agree with him. I think you should sit down with people who you disagree with. That is how you get change. And that's actually why I was the first politician to argue we should give a state visit to Donald Trump. And Keir Starmer is right to engage with him. So I don't disagree with him on that. And I would engage if I had a chance to talk to him. I wouldn't at the state banquet. I had a chance to talk to him. I'd take that chance. But you don't get that at the banquet. And I also think he's been proven wrong, isn't he, Mr. Cleverly? We're now having this debate, and I want to continue this debate because if we do, there is a chance that our government, our country, could influence the one man who can stop all this killing and starvation and get the hostages out. But, you know, James wasn't my only critic, and I'm sure many of you itching to speak to me and tell me you disagree with me as well. But there was from the LBC, LBC's own Ian Dale had a programme on just on this, and he doesn't agree with me either. So let's hear what Ian has to say.
I thought, no, that can't be true. No serious politician would do that. But it is true. That's exactly what he's announced. And I'm thinking to myself, well, surely, why would you pass up the opportunity to actually have a word in Donald Trump's ear at the state dinner? Because there's usually sort of drinky poos beforehand. So as a party leader, I'm sure he could have wormed his way into the circle of Donald Trump and had a little go at him. But no, he's going to virtue signal, because that's all that this is. And that is not the sign of a serious party or a serious party leader. The Lib Dems are not a protest party. They have 72 MPs. They have aspirations to have even more. And I think just at the point where you think, well, actually, no, they have got a lot of good MPs, and I've been taking them far more seriously than I have done for the last 10 years. And then he goes and does this. And I think it's made him look a complete and utter plonker.
Well, listen, I hope I'm on Ian Dale's show so we can have that discussion, because obviously I disagree with him. But I've got a caller for Ian from Surbiton, who I think he agrees with Ian Dale and James Cleverly. So can we hear from Ian, please?
Good morning, Ed.
Hi.
Yes, we are known to each other. My wife's already said, if you're not going, can she have your seat? Means I've got to go along as well. I honestly think there's an old expression, I won't use the full version, but sometimes it's better to be inside the tent doing whatever, going out, than standing outside going in. And I think to influence Trump, you should have gone, you may not have met him, that's true. You may not even met his lackeys circling around. But there was always a chance that you might have done. And at the moment, all that Trump's going to hear about this, if he hears about it, and I bet J.D. Vance can't wait to tell him, he's going to say, well, he's a buffoon. What do you expect?
Ian, listen, mate, I would love to say that these types of invites are transferable and your wife could go in my place. It doesn't work like that, I'm afraid. But listen, I really value your opinion. I wouldn't have got to speak to him. And I think the press clippings and hopefully the government will be stimulated to do the right thing and get the message over to Donald Trump in a way that I wouldn't have been able to if I'd gone. So, listen, I think I really value calling. I think I know who you are. Thank you for what you do for our community. But listen, let's have more callers. Call me on 0345 6060 973. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, standing in for James O'Brien. The time is now just after 10:15.
LBC.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Paul Abrahams, Principal Cosmetic Dentist at Smarmore Dental Care, St. John's Wood. I refer my implant patients to Darwin and Tanner and consider them to be an extension of my fabulous team. I trust the team at Darwin and Tanner to help me give my patients the smile they've always wanted.
A team of dental experts second to none, armed with the very latest in dental implant knowledge, technology and techniques. Visit darwinandtanner.co.uk.
An electric car grant is good, but an electric car grant on an award-winning Renault, where we do all the paperwork for you. Incroyable. Renault range now available with the electric car grant and 0% APR representative. Search Renault electric car grant. Order by 30th of September 2025. Exclude Channel Islands. PCP Mobilized Financial Services. Minimum deposit required. 18 plus. T's and C's apply.
Ed Davey on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Hi, you're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC, standing in for James O'Brien. We're talking about the state banquet for Donald Trump and my decision not to go because we need to put pressure on him to do the right thing and stop the killing and the famine and get the hostage release in Gaza. I think he's the only person who can do it, and that's why I've decided not to go, so we can talk about it. Now, not everyone's going to agree with this, so let's go to someone who I think's not going to agree with me. I think it's Ron in Maidstone.
Yes. Am I speaking to you now?
You are, Ron. Hi.
Oh, excellent. Well, look, you're a very nice bloke, and I think you are. You have the right values and probably have the right opinion and share the opinion I probably have on the whole Gaza situation. However, I do share the views better expressed than I possibly can by Ian Dale and James Cleverly. I think they're right, and I think you made a mistake in your decision because I think you were looking at your party and your supporters more than you were looking at the world situation. And I think you could have made, just possibly, just by some chance, rubbing shoulders with some people who may be able to have some influence on Mr. Trump. There's only a slim chance, but you've got no chance of having any impact on the situation by your decision. Because that decision means that you'll not meet anybody or see anybody who's going to have any impact. And the fact that this is a little news item in our little country will have no impact on Trump. He won't even hear of it.
Well, Ron, you know, you might be right. Who knows? We can't be absolutely sure. But the point of what I've done, and thank you for your comments at the start, by the way. That's very kind of you. But the point of what I've done is to actually influence Keir Starmer and the government. We've got to put pressure, not just me, I think, Labour backbenchers, the public. I've got to say to Keir Starmer, following up this lead that I've made, we need you to influence Trump on his visit. He's coming over here, not just at the banquet, but all the many meetings that government ministers will have. And my boycott is really about putting pressure
on Keir Starmer and his government. They have the detailed meetings. They have the chance to make the diplomacy. And, Ron, that's why I've taken the position that I have. I've got now Peter from Gillingham in Kent. Peter.
Well, it's Gillingham, Ed.
Gillingham.
Who's worried about that?
Thanks for correcting me. I'm actually going to train to Gillingham today, but Gillingham in Dorset, not in Kent.
Yeah, indeed. There is a confusion, so you're absolutely forgiven. I want to agree with you, but for a different reason.
Uh-huh.
I think the first caller, I agree with your answer. But I do think that there is a good reason not to go, based on the fact that Donald Trump will disagree. If you even have a chance at all to speak with him, which you probably don't, the following day he'll have forgotten about it when he's watched another TV program. So we're dealing with a psychopath, really, here. So I think on that basis alone, and of course there are many ways to do diplomacy, as you pointed out, with Keir Starmer as the head of state to do that, and so I agree with that point as well. But there's no point in dealing with psychopaths. On the other hand, just to be very on the fence about this, if you don't attend a meeting with a psychopath because he's an important psychopath in the world, you miss the opportunity to be influential. But I think, as you say, there are other ways to do it. That would be my central point.
Well, thank you for that view, Peter. I mean, I haven't quite used the words you've used. Well, I have said that he's a one-off as a US president. I normally support the US president and America. They're our close ally. It's just this guy's, not your term, but he's not a reliable ally. However, I do think Keir Starmer and the Foreign Secretary David Lammy could use this moment to get it over and get over the point that I'm making. So, Peter, anything else you want to say?
Well, don't forget, Ed, we are better as Britain in a better Europe for a better world. So don't forget to break Brexit before Brexit breaks Britain. I know you are.
Well, we're going to talk about Donald Trump in the second hour of the show and how I think we could use our European friends to be tougher than Starmer's doing. So I'm going to come to that later, Peter. But listen, thank you for your call. It's good to know someone's agreeing with me. But if you disagree with what I've done, tell me why on 0345 6060973. You can WhatsApp on the same number. You can text on 84850 and tell me if you think I've done the right thing to boycott the Trump state banquet. And, you know, I've got Julia from Desborough. Julie, is it? Is it Julie?
Yes.
Hi, Julie.
Yes. Hi. I'm a former mayor, much lesser, obviously, than royalty, of Cornwall Council, and I was a Labour councillor, so I'm not a Lib Dem.
Okay.
You know, but I agree with what you're doing. I know how these occasions work. It's like being a black grain of sand in a big pile of white sand. You wouldn't get to speak to him anyway. And I totally agree with the fact that you supported him initially, supported having the state banquet, and then when you saw what his values really were, which we all really know what he's about, and it's all about himself. All he wants is a Nobel Peace Prize, and the way he's going, he'll never get one. I quite agree that you, with what you've, the stand you've taken, and it might not make a huge impact, but it might be like a little needle in somebody, and I'm sure J.D. Vance will be happy to report it to him. So I just think you're doing the right thing, because sometimes you just got to stand by your principles, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I want to be clear that I'd have spoken to Donald Trump and gone and to the state bank if it wasn't for his power to change stuff in Gaza. For me, this is very much about his power to make change in Gaza, because, you know, I disagree with Donald Trump on lots of things. That sounds like you might well do too, whether it's on trade and the way he's damaging the world economy, on the way he's treated Ukrainian President Zelensky. But I think on Gaza, he has got the power to make a difference. So, Julie, thank you so much for that call. I've now got Peter from Sheffield. Interested in what you've got to say, Peter.
Hi, Ed. It's an honour to speak to you. Thanks for taking me. Ed, just on Trump, I don't think he has any interest in ending the war, because I believe he's in, it's obvious to me, in cahoots with with Netanyahu, and the objective is to get rid of the Palestinians out of Gaza, and for this Trump slash United States to create some sort of industry slash holiday resort, as it's been mentioned before. But I don't think he has any interest whatsoever in ending the war, despite his lies about caring for kids and women and men being blown to bits. In regard to your attending the event, I think, personally, sir, if I were you, I would go enjoy the food and and make other contacts. So, you know, as you said, you're probably not to get to talk to Trump, but I think you made a mistake, sir.
All right. Well, listen, I agree with you and your first point, Peter. I think he's shown no interest in ending the war. In fact, the other day he was talking about the fact that and boasting that he'd ended six wars. I'm not sure if he has, but he didn't refer to what's happening in Gaza as a war. It was irrelevant. And I don't know if you saw, Peter, when he did that interview, when he said he thinks Gaza's a nice piece of real estate. I mean,
yes.
I don't know about you, I was appalled by that.
It's obvious to me what he's up to, and I don't know how it can be stopped, because Netanyahu and I believe and he are, you know, joined at the hip, and they've got something going together, and the idea of getting Gaza probably an extension of Israel, like the West Bank.
Yeah, well, it is very sad, isn't it? I mean, listen, whatever the UK government does, you're right, he may just go on and do what he wants to do. But I think in our democracy, when so many people are really horrified by what they're seeing, that they expect their politicians to actually stand up and be counted, and they expect their government to use every single diplomatic lever possible to get the message over, which is really what I'm trying to do. And, you know, it's not about enjoying the food, Peter, for me. It's about getting a debate, putting pressure on our government to do whatever they can on Donald Trump. But Peter, I've got a WhatsApp message from Tracy, who disagrees with you and me. She says this is performative nonsense, trying to appeal to the naive sixth form political cheerers on the left. No voter should take you seriously. Well, thank you, Tracy. Thank you for your opinion. I'm glad that Peter and others have a different view. But I've got another caller, Adam from Bedford. Adam.
Hey, Ed, it's a real pleasure to speak with you. I have a lot of respect for you. My point is really about the messaging here and what you've chosen to do.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the point that you should have made is about it being a banquet and about lots of the elite being there and enjoying amazing food, while so many thousands of people and children are starving in Gaza. It would have been a complete act of hypocrisy to go to a banquet and, you know, enjoy all those lavishes. And I think perhaps if you'd framed it that way, you would have less people being so frustrated with you to not be in the room.
Adam, listen, it's a really good point. And when I wrote about this, I thought of making exactly that point. But what I'm not going to do is actually criticise people who have chosen to go. Because I actually called for the state visit, and I think it is right that people who are going to be able to talk to Donald Trump at that visit and at the banquet get that chance. And I'm not going to criticise the king. I've got huge respect for the king. In fact, the most difficult thing for me, Adam, in all this was having to decline an invitation from the king himself, because I'm a monarchist. I think the king and the royal family do a fantastic job, and it's a huge honour to be invited, and that's what I really wrestled with. But I take your point. I take your point. When you see those skeletal kids starving, so thin, and people killed queuing up for food and water, and they may take the hostages, it brings it home to you, doesn't it? And so I absolutely take your point here. But I've got another caller in. Is it Farah? I hope I've pronounced that right. From Southfield.
Yes, it is, Farah. Well, thank you for having me on. Well, I do support what you're doing. And actually, I just think for a lot of us, it's a real relief to see a political leader show some courage, integrity, moral leadership. And I think it's completely morally repugnant to go to a feast in honour of a man who could stop a man-made, starvation. I just can't think of anything more disgusting. So, I absolutely support you. But I also think you played a little bit of a blinder, because I think you are going to pick up an awful lot more votes. I've been a Labour voter for most of my life. And last time I actually voted for the Lib Dems because I couldn't find a home. And one of the things that, I think Jeremy Corbyn has generated a lot of attention, because a lot of us see him having, being quite strong on social justice and moral leadership and having some integrity and actually standing up. And I think you're probably going to tap into that base as well. So well done you. I mean, I know you did it for the right reasons, but I think you are probably going to get, a far better outcome possibly at the next election. So, and I would like to see you do well, because I'm politically homeless. I'd love to see your party do well.
Oh, Farah, thank you very much for those kind comments, and I hope we can win your support. But as you said, this is about doing the right thing, and I hope we can put our pressure on our government and they do the right thing, and then Trump does the right thing, because actually it's all about outcomes. It's all about stopping the famine, stopping the devastation and getting those hostages released. So thank you for your call, Farah. I really appreciate it. Now, I'm Ed Davey. I'm standing in for James O'Brien this morning. Call me on 0345 6060973 or WhatsApp me on the same number. But we've got to go to the news headlines now at 10:30 with Thomas Watts.
Free chickenpox vaccines will be rolled out for children in England and Wales on the NHS from January. It's hoped it'll prevent rare complications and cut the time parents have to take off work. Israel has declared Gaza City a dangerous combat zone. It means the Israeli military will no longer suspend fighting in the area to allow for aid to be distributed. A government minister has warned the closure of migrant hotels could lead to people living destitute in the streets. Appeal judges will rule later on whether to overturn a temporary injunction blocking asylum seekers being housed in Epping. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, some quite heavy with a rumble of thunder, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide, because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
OK, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What? Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist.
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville, made to be enjoyed, not endured.
Renault. An electric car grant is good. But an electric car grant on an award-winning Renault, where we do all the paperwork for you. Incroyable. Renault range now available with the electric car grant and 0% APR representative. Search Renault electric car grant. Order by 30th of September 2025. Exclude Channel Islands, PCP Mobilised Financial Services, minimum deposit required, 18 plus, T's and C's apply.
Hey mum, so you know we met Zara, my financial advisor? Yeah, from St James's Place. Well, she drafted our plan, so you can get that bungalow near me. Oh, and Sam, that lovely carer we found, will drop in. And I can bring over my signature shepherd's pie. Oi!
Big decisions call for invaluable advice. Visit St James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
This is LBC with Ed Davey. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Hi, you're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC. We've had a WhatsApp from Sarah. She says, Ed, if you were Prime Minister, then you would have to attend the banquet. But in your position, it's OK for you not to attend. However, I think your rationale should have appeared less personal to Trump. Thank you very much, Sarah. And let's go straight back to your calls. We've got Stephen from Pontefract.
Hello, Ed. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, good to speak to you too.
I'd like to...
Thank you. I'd like to disagree with what Farah said, actually. I voted for Lib Dems in the last election.
Thank you.
And like Farah, you know, a little bit politically homeless. But I disagree with you, mate.
Right.
When you're in a position of power and a position of influence, if you shirk that responsibility, mate, it looks to me as a voter like if I asked you to step up to people like Putin and Netanyahu and put my trust in the fact that you are going to help resolve these issues. If you walk away from that table, even though there's a very little, amount of hope that you'd be able to influence in that position, if you walk away from that smart, tiny little bit of chance, you're giving yourself no opportunity. And, you know, people talk about virtue signalling. I understand where you're coming from on principle, but when you look at it politically, in the job that you do, in what you're supposed to represent your voters' influence, if you get my drift, you're not putting yourself in a position where you're able to influence. You're putting yourself in a position where you're walking away as though to say, right, I'm taking my toys home. I'm taking my ball home. I understand your principles, I really do, but I think in the position that you're in, to send that signal to the voter, I would like your opinion on what you think my opinion on that is, and why you disagree.
Stephen, well, first of all, thank you for phoning in, and thank you for your opinion, and I agree, at least we agree on the principles. Let me say why I'm not shirking responsibility. I actually think I'm meeting my responsibilities. My responsibility is to get this on the table being debated, and it wasn't being debated. And I was really worried that Trump would come to this country and he wouldn't hear in the press, in the media, from the government at any stage that we felt he should act and must act. And, you know, let's be clear, Stephen, I wouldn't get a chance to speak to him. If he wants to meet me, I'm here. I will have a proper chat with him and get my point of view over. But that wasn't on the table as an offer for me. I want to make sure that our government does that. And it's
all
about...
I still don't understand the benefit. I don't understand the benefit. If you're saying he might not even know about you, not turning up and accepting the invitation, you might not speak to him. I don't understand the benefit, the real conjugal benefit.
Well, let me explain. I want you, because you agree with me, the principal, and other listeners, whether they agree with my action or not, I want you to put pressure on your MPs. Get them to write to Keir Starmer and David Lammy and say, you've got to raise this. Ed Davey's right on the issue that Donald Trump is the one person who can sort this out, and you, Prime Minister, you, Foreign Secretary, should tell him that. So that's the reason I've done this, to really get this issue right up the agenda, and hopefully it will work. Anyway, I've got to thank you for your call, Stephen. I want to go to Phil from Heathrow, who I also think disagrees with me. Phil.
Good morning. Yes, I do. I think the issue here is twofold. The first thing is that I think you're actually deflecting away from the main conversation by making this about you and your decision rather than actually about Gaza. I think that, and also to sort of move on from that, I think that if you hadn't already been to six of these things before, you wouldn't be so keen to turn it down this time.
Well, Phil, thanks for that point. I mean, on the first point, which is, I think, the really serious one, this is all about Gaza. I'm sorry if you think I'm making it about me. It really isn't. It's about raising this issue so the public, the media, the government make it the issue with Donald Trump. It would be very easy for them to talk about many other things and ignore this. I want to make sure that the people of Gaza, whether they're the people starving and being killed or whether they're the hostages, people in Gaza are remembered, not just during the banquet, but during the whole state visit, and it's a key part of British diplomacy to the Americans and particularly to Donald Trump's White House. Because you're absolutely right, it is about Gaza and the people who are starving and being killed there and being held hostage. Would I have gone if I hadn't gone to six more previously? Well, I don't know. It's impossible to say. But what I would say is, having gone, I know that I won't have a chance to speak to Donald Trump. That's not how these things work. There's so many people, and you never get a chance, not in my experience. So it was the experience, not the grub, I have to say, that made me decide not to go. But Phil, thank you for your call. We've now got Leon in Worksop. I used to live near there. Leon, tell me.
Hi, Ed. Yes, you born in Mansfield, grew up in Nottingham.
Yeah, that's right.
Just down the road from me.
Yeah, my dad came from a mining family in North Nottinghamshire, and I was brought up in, as you say, Mansfield and Sutton, Newark and central Nottingham. So it's I'm actually a Notts County fan, believe it or not.
Well, we all have problems in life.
Yeah. Go on, what's your question, Leon?
The point I wanted to make is, first of all, as you probably know, I'm an Israeli. I'm very active in the Lib Dems anyway.
Ah, okay.
I totally support what you're doing. I think the only way to put pressure on Netanyahu is through Trump. And the only way to put pressure on Trump is to show him that if he wants the Nobel Peace Prize, he actually has to work for it and put that pressure on Netanyahu and make the fighting in Gaza stop. I watch what's happening. I speak with Palestinians and Israelis. I'm hosting a meeting with Palestinians and Israelis at a conference in 3 weeks' time. And we need to put pressure on whoever can put pressure on Netanyahu to stop the fighting, to stop the war. It's not helping Israel. It's certainly not helping Gazans. And it's not helping bring about peace in an area which I love. And we need to do something more to put that pressure on people. And I think not going to the banquet, you've actually put this issue onto the front pages. You've got people talking about it. Whereas if you just got along as normal, nobody would have been saying a word. Thank you very much.
Leon, listen, I'm grateful for that. And coming from you as an Israeli living in the UK, I think that's really powerful. I'll tell you what, I hadn't thought about your idea about Trump getting the Nobel Peace Prize. Maybe if he did this and brought the conflict to an end and we got a two-state solution for Israel and Palestine, maybe he would actually deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. Maybe that's what we should say, that Britain would support him getting it if he made these calls, if he called up Netanyahu, if he called up the Qatari government, got the hostages released and ended this famine and this war. He'd probably deserve it then, wouldn't he, Leon? Thank you for your call. I've got Tracy from Ealing. Tracy, hello.
Hello, Ed. You seem like a lovely man, but I would never want you to be Prime Minister, I'm afraid.
You started so well, Tracy.
Do you actually think that Keir Starmer just gets in a room with Trump and doesn't discuss things like Gaza? He's been working with other leaders around the world to try to get him to budge on the Ukraine and Russia situation, and we all can see that it's a really difficult job to get him to move anywhere. I don't think Starmer just goes in the room and doesn't mention Gaza. I don't think, I wonder what you think Starmer could do in terms of putting pressure on Trump, because I don't think he can do that. What would you do? What kind of pressure would you put on Trump?
Well, Tracy, look, it's a fair question. Thank you very much for offering. And it is a difficult job. Being a prime minister, being a minister at all is difficult. But it's a question of the priorities in the conversation, isn't it? And
priorities, though, because he even if he says, I think this about Gaza, Trump is not going to, he doesn't have that influence. Trump does what Trump wants to do. And Netanyahu is his kind of guy. Nothing you do is going to change Starmer's stance, I'll tell you that. And nothing Starmer does is going to change Donald Trump's stance.
Well,
it's just naive, performative nonsense, I'm afraid.
Tracy, I disagree with that. I'll tell you why. Listen, we have a democracy here. It's a powerful democracy. And we look to the government of the day to, you know, respond to the wishes of the British people and to do the right thing and to uphold international law. And what we're seeing in Gaza is a humanitarian crisis like we've not seen, I think, before. We've heard the UN calling it a famine in Gaza City. We see the IDF about to go into Gaza, where there's 1 million civilians. And therefore, there's a degree of urgency in this, which I'm pretty sure you'd agree with on that. And
I'm sure who knows whether would agree, but he can't change Trump.
Well, he can have a go. I mean, the idea that he shouldn't.
Why do you think he's not?
Well,
what evidence do you have that he isn't trying to change Trump's mind?
Well, Tracy, you know that those sort of conversations are confidential, so we don't have evidence either way.
Exactly.
But Tracy could say more publicly as well. He has. I question him in the House of Commons when the House is sitting. I have two questions every week now, and sometimes he can reveal things. So I asked him a question, didn't get actually reported, but I thought it was a really interesting answer from the Prime Minister when I probed him, when he was more critical of Trump about being a protectionist. So he can, if you push him the right way, he can stand up and do the right thing. And what I am trying to do,
if you push him the right way at the right time.
Well, this is what I'm trying to do now, you see.
We have to protect our own country at the same time, don't we?
We do.
In terms of trade deals and things like that. So you have to be very careful. It's all right being in opposition and just throwing out words and saying we hate Trump and all that. But when you're in power, that's a totally different story.
Well, you are right to say that we have to engage with a government even when we disagree with them. And I've said that all along, actually. And to be fair, Tracy, I was the first politician to call for Trump to be granted a state visit. But with what is happening in Gaza, I think it has to be right at the top of the agenda. I'm sorry you disagree with me, Tracy, but thank you very much for your call. We've had a WhatsApp from Rob. He says, "Hi, Ed, I think Keir is well aware of the situation in Gaza, but is limited in what he can do, a bit like Tracy. You're not telling isn't really going to have much difference, I'm afraid. Your intentions are there, but it's not going to achieve anything." Well, Rob, we'll see. I don't think he's suddenly going to change his mind, but I think it's incumbent on people like me to do whatever we can given the desperate situation. But thank you for your WhatsApp, Rob. Now, you're listening to me, Ed Davey. More of your calls on the way. The time is now 10:45.
This is LBC.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in-store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it isn't there. You can't hold this in your hand or pack it in your bags. You can't touch it. But our network is around you, like oxygen. Near or far, we're there. That's why we've been awarded Best Mobile Network Coverage by Uswitch. O2, essential for living.
Based on Open Signal Awards, UK Mobile Network Experience Report, September 2024, to verify, see opensignal.com/UK Mobile Report.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What?
Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist?
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville. Made to be enjoyed, not endured.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
OK, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
OK.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's supply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Ed Davey on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Hi, you're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC, standing in for James O'Brien. I've got time for a few more of your calls before the 11 o'clock news. Joe from North Cheam.
Hello, Ed. I'm a big fan. I've become a member of the party, and I'm an active member just because of your leadership. So thank you very much for everything you've been doing. I've been hearing the programme from the beginning, and I think most people have agreed with you on your stance on Gaza, but they've disagreed on whether you attend or not. However, I think I agree with you for not attending, because had you attended, no conversation would have been triggered. It would have been just a normal day, a next day that whereby you attend, maybe you have a small talk with Trump, and then that's at best, it would be a small talk. And Trump is not a person that you can convince over a small talk. So I completely agree with you that you haven't attended, because this has started a conversation across the entire nation. And that is a good thing that you've done. So secondly, the reason why I agree with you is that from a person who lectures and has studied ethics, we have contextual ethics, which is to do with this stance on politics and what we need to do as politicians or what you need to do as politician, etc. However, there's something called the global ethics, which we all agree on. People being killed, global ethics. Someone has been involved with Epstein, global ethics. Those things are red lines, which gives you the full right not to even think twice about whether you should attend or not. I think that saying no to the king, I know it might make my heart and your heart sink because you had to do so. However, I think it's one of the things that gives us leverage that we can do so that we can put pressure on Starmer and pressure on other MPs and get other people and much more people asking their MPs not to attend or to raise it with Starmer. So well done. Well done. And thank you very much for what you've done.
Joe, thank you for your call. I should say that Trump disputes how some have characterised his relationship with Epstein. I think that should go on the record. But I'm grateful for your call and that you agree, Joe. Can I now go now to June in Box Hill in Surrey? June, what have you got? What would you like to say?
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Ed. We've met a number of times, most recently at Bockett's Farm.
Oh, right.
Over a year ago MP, Chris Coughlin. I've been a member for years, so I support you on most things. I should say that straight off. It's a difficult one, I think, though. My friend Peter Cook, he was on earlier, Peter Cook from Gillingham. I agree with a lot of what he said, actually, although I perhaps choose different words. Trump isn't a nice man. If I know Charles, which obviously I don't, but from what I read about him, he's probably not really particularly wanting to host this banquet either. But it is a difficult one, because there's a lot to be said for being there and having influence and all the rest of it. But then, like you say, you're not even going to meet him anyway. So this is actually getting so much media traction, so much media coverage, that suddenly everybody is actually discussing this and everybody is now talking about this and hopefully putting pressure on their MPs to maybe do the same. So I see this as a good thing, and I see this as you really standing up with integrity and standing up for what you actually believe. Because at the end of the day, it is about those people in Gaza and what they're experiencing. And this, I don't even have words anymore to describe what I feel about this. The images, they're just truly horrifying and horrendous on every single level. And nothing about this is even remotely normal. And somebody has to make a stand and do something. And I'm just so proud of the fact that it's actually you.
Well, June, listen, that's really kind of you. I mean, to be clear, and I think you touched on this, I had to really wrestle with it, not about Trump, but about the king. Because I've huge respect for King Charles. I think he's a fantastic monarch, and I really believe in the monarchy and the leadership that he shows. And so it was quite a difficult decision, I'll be honest. I talked about it a lot with my wife. I even prayed about it. So difficult decision, but those images in Gaza and the fact that Trump could do something if he chose was what really was on my mind. I've got a WhatsApp message from Austin. Ed, if you become PM and you will have to meet Trump or potentially Vance, are you still going to stand by your principles? Absolutely. Actually, Austin, in the next hour, we're going to talk about how we should deal with Trump. So it's all pretty relevant for that. Another WhatsApp from Reagan in Bridgend. I couldn't disagree with you more. Thanks for that, Reagan. I think you would have sparked more of a conversation by saying that you are going and that you are going to raise the debate at the banquet with anyone you can. Instead, it seems like you've copped out and are relying on everyone else to do the talking for you. Reagan, listen, I hear your point. I really do. Problem is, I just wouldn't have been able to do that at the bank. It's not how they operate, unfortunately. They're very formal. You just get to speak to the person beside you, really. But let me go to the next caller, Annie from Carnforth. Annie, what would you like to say?
Well, I do think it's a good thing what you're doing, because it has got the issue raised again. Because, to be honest, considering what's going on, this situation in Gaza doesn't get as much coverage as it should do. But although I think the one person that you could really put pressure on, who really can't avoid you in the comments, is Keir Starmer. And Keir Starmer has the ability to do things himself, which he should be doing and isn't. I don't feel there should be any arms at all going to Israel. The UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestine Territories, Francesca Albanese, has called for a total arms embargo on Israel, for all economic ties to be severed with Israel, all trade, all political and diplomatic ties. The only way Netanyahu will be influenced, I think, is by hitting the economy, the Israeli economy. I don't think he cares about international law or what people think. And also, obviously, Trump is the only person that could stop it. But Trump is, you know, just joined at the hip with Netanyahu. They are in lockstep about this. And he is a willing participant, Trump. And Biden was before him, but Trump even more so. But I have to say Keir Starmer is as well. You know, the RAF are flying intelligence flights over Gaza. We are involved in this, we're complicit in this, and we shouldn't be as a country. So I think you ought to try and influence Keir Starmer, because there are things he could do. And if all Western countries stop supporting Israel in this, stop trading with Israel, sanctions on Israel as a state, not just on a few individuals, because it isn't just a few individuals. Netanyahu doesn't really have any different views to people like Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, but Ben-Gavir and Smotrich are much more vocal about it. But they all want the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. So, you know, I think that it's Keir Starmer needs to step up to the plate.
Well, listen, Annie, thank you very much for your call. I mean, I agree that it's Keir Starmer who we need to put pressure on. I do that when the House of Commons is sitting. I've asked, I think, more Prime Minister's questions to Keir Starmer on this issue than any other opposition leader. And it's really important that we do. And I'm glad you feel that way. I think lots of people do, you know. Certainly a lot of people calling in do. And so we've got to try to get our government to get that message over, whether they listen or not. But it's really important that we do our very, very best. And, you know, on sanctions, I've called in the House of Commons at a question to Keir Starmer for Netanyahu to be sanctioned. So we really do have to get that message over to them too. Can I go to the next call, though? Scott from West Hampstead. Scott, what would you like to say?
Hi, Ed. I agree with a lot of what your last caller has said. You're a man of great principle. I voted Lib Dem at the last election, and I'm going to be voting for you again.
Oh, great.
You'd make a great Prime Minister.
Thank you very much.
You're doing the right thing by not attending, because you're in tune with the majority, I think, of the British public, who don't want Trump over here. They really don't want him. They didn't want him in Scotland. A lot of people didn't want him when he went up to the golf courses, you know, 30 weeks ago. I don't like the way that Trump, I mean, maybe he thinks he's doing his best, but he says he wants to stop the killing. But why is he cozying up to Putin? And why is he supporting the stance that Netanyahu's taking in Gaza? I mean, you know, his words are at odds with his actions. That's my view. And I think that if you went to a lot of people who are going to go to the banquet, love your comments about King Charles and the royal family, the great family. Liked what you said, admired all of that. And I think there are going to be a lot of people at that banquet with indigestion, because they don't want to be sitting down there with Trump.
Scott, yeah, maybe they need some indigestion pills available to people. Who knows? But listen, I've no problem with engaging with Donald Trump, by the way. That's the whole point of what I'm doing. We've got to engage with him because he has that power. And we may not like him, and I don't like, as we're going to hear in the next hour, a lot of what he stands for and says and does. But you've got to engage with him. It's just that I wouldn't have a chance at the state banquet, and this is the better way in my view. Listen, thank you so much for your call, Scott, and your support. And can I say thank you for all your calls today? We've had a very busy phone line. It certainly sparked a lot of attention, and not everyone's agreed with me, which is absolutely fair. I think it's been a good debate, and I just hope the debate can continue, because the whole purpose of what I'm trying to do is to make sure that the issue of Gaza, the famine, the conflict, the hostages are raised properly, and we put pressure through our government on Trump to do what only he can do. You know, we're going into the next hour. We're going to actually take on from this to talking about Trump himself. I think Starmer is too soft on Trump. Do you agree with me? Or has he got it right in his approach? Call me on 0345 6060 973. You can WhatsApp on that number. We really want to hear from you. It really makes a great conversation. But you're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC. The time now is 11 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, a health minister has told LBC that anti-vaccine misinformation has become a big problem. Stephen Kinnock says work is underway with schools and GPs to tackle conspiracy theories, with the uptake of jabs well below target levels. Young children in England and Wales will be offered a free chickenpox vaccine from January. GP Dr. Sarah Jarvis has told us there are real risks if they miss out on immunisation.
People go, oh, well, I don't want to give my child the vaccine because I am terrified that by doing something to them, in other words, giving them the vaccine, I am going to do them harm. People have to understand that by not doing something to them, in other words, choosing not to give them the vaccine, they are actively putting them in harm's way.
Israel has confirmed it is suspending pauses in fighting for aid delivery in Gaza City. Defence officials say the area is now a dangerous combat zone. Israel is preparing to broaden its offensive in Gaza City, mobilising tens of thousands of troops. A government contractor has defended its attempt to hire arts and crafts tutors at an immigration removal centre. Mighty advertised a series of jobs near Heathrow, including staff to lead floristry, cake decorating and balloon craft workshops. The Home Office has told the firm to remove the roles. Health Minister Stephen Kinnock told LBC the jobs are clearly unnecessary.
They're contractually obliged to have some kind of physical exercise because you want to make sure that people aren't falling into ill health, because that just makes it even worse for the taxpayer if we're having to deal with that kind of thing. But this, it seems that there's been an excessive interpretation.
The cost of the weight loss jab Mounjaro will not rise by as much as expected on Monday. The pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly says it struck a deal with UK pharmacies to maintain affordability of the drug. LBC reported earlier this week that supply had been frozen ahead of the price change. A train guard in northern France has taken a hard line against a cat for making too much noise. A passenger was fined nearly £100 after a fellow traveller complained the pet, called Monet, was meowing too loudly. Public transport etiquette has become a hot topic across Europe in recent months. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.82. That's down 34. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, some quite heavy with a rumble of thunder, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.75% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that countryside getaway with the family. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.65% gross. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ed Davey.
Good morning. You're listening to me, Ed Davey. In this next hour, I want to talk about Keir Starmer and his approach to the man in the White House, Donald Trump. Let's face it, he's a president like we've never known before. You know, he was there for a term before, but I think his second term is very, very different. And since he took over the reins of power in January, he's changed the world order on things like the economy, with his approach on trade and tariffs and high tech and stuff like that. But he's also changed the whole debate on defence and security, and done things that no other American president has ever done. And it's meant that many of us have had to change our view about how we should deal with the White House. You know, speaking both for myself, my party, but I think for many, many people, cross-party, people outside politics, they've always regarded as America as our best friend, our closest ally. And, you know, I'm sure many of you take that view, whether it's so much of what America has done for the world, fantastic country. And that's why it's been so dramatic, frankly, that the new occupant of the White House has changed absolutely everything. And I personally think he's no longer a reliable ally for the UK. Now, I guess Keir Starmer does too, actually. I bet he shares many of my views, but he is the Prime Minister and he has to try to work with whoever is in the White House. And he's taken a particular approach to that. I think he's been a bit too soft, but I want to hear your views on that. He has, you know, been the world leader, if you like, who's cozied up, who's, you know, given the letter, if you remember that first meeting in the White House, the letter from the King to create this state visit that's happening next month. He has frankly let Donald Trump say things in his own presence which we know the Prime Minister doesn't agree with. And I think he's just tried to be as nice as he possibly can to the President of the United States, even when he clearly disagrees with him. And he hopes that will work. And let's face it, it's worked on one level. The tariffs imposed on the UK are slightly less than the tariff imposed on other countries, on the EU and others. Only slightly. But, you know, Keir Starmer, if he was here, he'd say, look what I've done there. He'd probably also say that he's persuaded Donald Trump to do other things. I can't quite remember what else he's achieved by his approach, but I'm sure he would defend it. Maybe you want to defend Keir Starmer's cozying up. I just think a different approach would work better, not just now, but over the next few months and years. Because let's remember, he's not always going to be the President of the United States. And I think there are other world leaders who've taken a different approach. Some of our close allies, Canada, Australia, they've been a bit tougher. Mark Carney, who's now the Prime Minister in Canada, he said, look, we're not going to put up with this. And he's had quite public rows with President Trump. Anthony Albanese, he's the Prime Minister in Australia, another of our close allies, again, has been very critical of Donald Trump in the way we've not seen from Keir Starmer. I don't think actually they've paid a price for that, and actually I think they've garnered support. But, you know, you need to come and tell me if you think Starmer's softly approach will actually be better. I'm really, really worried, I have to say. What I think we need to do is have an alternative, right? Because it's way it's presented is that we've got no choice, that we have to work with Donald Trump. And on certain things, of course we do, particularly the security relationship. You know, we share a lot of intelligence. That's really important. But when it comes to the economy, I think we could do much more with our close allies, whether it's Commonwealth allies like Canada and Australia and India, whether it's European allies, France, Germany, Italy, countries across Europe, countries in the Far East, you know, South Korea, Japan. Those countries still believe in free trade, don't believe in the protectionism, the tariffs the tariffs of the tariff man, Donald Trump, they still, I think, agree with the UK that you improve your economy, you get prices lower, you cut the cost of living, you improve incomes if you have more trade. And I think if I was Prime Minister, I'd be looking to create a coalition of the willing on the economy, new trade deals, to show to Donald Trump, you know, we don't have to come to you with a begging bowl. We don't have to cozy up. We can look at alternatives. And you know what? He talks about deals, doesn't he? Well, his favourite word, deals, deals, deals. The art of the deal. He wrote this book, The Art of the Deal. I don't think he's actually that good at deals myself. Maybe you disagree. But if you've ever negotiated a deal, the way to do it is to show that you're strong, actually, that you have alternatives. You can walk away from the table. You're not reliant on a particular person, a business, an organisation, or a country. And I don't think Keir Starmer has been strong enough on creating an alternative and showing to President Trump we aren't going to kowtow to everything he does and says. And I am worried that if we don't take a stronger stance, that only will be less effective in the long term, not just with this American administration, but whoever follows this administration. But I also think our voice will be less effective in other parts of the world, in some of our closest allies, where we have incredibly important links on defence and on the economy. Let's talk a bit more about defence and what Donald Trump has done wrong there. You know, I think the way he has treated President Zelensky and Ukraine is quite shocking. I mean, we were talking the last hour about Gaza and Israel and Palestine and the Middle East, but look at the way this American president has cozied up to Vladimir Putin, who's a war criminal. And the idea that, you know, you treat Ukraine and President Zelensky the same as you treat President Putin and Russia is just outrageous, frankly. You know, Putin illegally invaded another country. He's killed hundreds of thousands of innocent Ukrainians. He's grabbed land. Quite outrageous. I mean, imagine, you know, in the Second World War, if we'd said, well, Germany's got a right to do this and can take land in Czechoslovakia and all the rest of it, and hadn't stood up to defend European neighbours, it would have been quite wrong. And we'd be, who knows, we might have been defeated by Germany in the end if we'd been taking the approach that Trump seems to be taking. And so that really worries me. I don't think he values NATO enough. Yes, we're seeing defence spending increase, and maybe some people will argue that Starmer's been forced to increase defence spending and Europe's been forced to increase defence spending. However, there is this constant threat that America won't be there as a close ally. And I think that's worrying. I think it sends all the wrong signals to Putin. I think it sends all the wrong signals to China. And that's why I think we have to treat Trump differently. He's acting like no other US president. So I want you to call me, if you disagree. Call me on 0345 6060973. WhatsApp me on the same number or text on 84850. I'm going to go to caller first, but let's have a WhatsApp from Beatrice. I think Keir Starmer deserves praise for his strategy of engagement with Trump, with getting one of the least worst tariffs from the USA in the world and bringing together European leaders to support Ukraine and push Trump away from Trump's wish to give Putin all he wants. However, Starmer needs to apply that diplomacy to other issues such as Gaza and Trump taking the USA into an authoritarian oligarchy and police state. Beatrice, I think I agree with quite a bit of that. I do think Starmer's approach with the coalition of the willing with respect to military cooperation in Ukraine is right, and I've supported him on that. I just think on the economy, he's getting it wrong with Trump, and I just think he needs to be tougher. But I've got a caller, first caller, Peter from Burton-on-Trent. Peter, what would you like to say?
Hi, Ed. Good to speak to you. I really do genuinely agree with you, to be honest, to do with Trump. And I cannot understand for the life of me why he's doing this with Trump when he could be moving back closer towards the EU. which is where most of our trade is with. So, I mean, it was quite big online that it was close to the USA versus close to the EU. And it seems like Starmer has chosen close to the USA, which is not good, in my opinion, especially with Trump in charge. And as for the text you just read out then that said we should be praising for getting one of the lower tariffs, that's like if I took £100 off you, you should be praised if you managed to get 20 of it back off of me. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't make sense to me why anyone should be praising anything that's going on at the moment. It's crazy. We just need to get... We need to rejoin the EU, in my opinion, but until then, we need to just get closer. You know, what you talk about with the customs union and things like that.
Yeah.
It would improve the economy so much, and I can't understand why it's not doing it.
Yeah, Peter, I tend to agree with you. Normally, you know, I never say it's USA versus Europe. We should be close allies to both of them. They are both share our values, and when we work together across democracies who stand up for things like free trade and against tyranny, then we're stronger, aren't we? But Trump has changed that equation, as you say, and I think part of the way of standing up to Trump better than Starmer is doing, is by working with Europe on trade through the customs union that you mentioned. If we had a UK-EU customs union, we'd cut business costs, trade would grow far more to offset the trade damage that Starmer's effectively accepted with this higher tariff, even though it's lower than in Europe. So I really think Starmer could get more if he took a different approach. But Peter, thank you very much for that call. So do call me on 0345 606 973, WhatsApp me on the same number, or text on 84850. Do you agree with me that Starmer should be tougher with President Trump, or do you think Starmer's got it about right? Look forward to your calls. You're listening to me, Ed Davey. The time is now 11:15.
This is LBC.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
This is LBC with Ed Davey. Call 0345 606 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
You're listening to me, Ed Davey. We're talking about Donald Trump and whether or not Keir Starmer's sort of cozying approach is the right way. Should he be more Hugh Grant from Love Actually and lay it on and be much tougher? That's what I think. I want to know what you think. So do call on 0345 6060 973. Let me go to some callers. Peter from Oxford, what do you think about this?
Hello, Ed. How are you doing? I'm quite an activist, I should say. I look forward to seeing you once again at the conference in September. But on the question of Trump, I mean, back to the first, your principal stance, I think, was justified. We need more principled politicians. And on that same theme, I think we should stand up to Trump in the same way as Mark Carney has done. And I'll tell you why, because I think it was profoundly damaging at home to Starmer to see him being obsequious to Trump in the White House on that visit and handing over that letter. I think that was a very bad look indeed. Now, he will say that actually gave the country concessions in terms of trade deals. Complete nonsense. The reason why the UK has a 10% tariff as against the EU's higher one is because the UK never had a trade deficit or never had a trade surplus with the US. Therefore, it's not in the US's interest to impose high tariffs. It was a purely pragmatic decision, not one that was a response to Starmer's approach. And I don't think that Trump understands deals. He talks about the art of the deal. Now, Tony Schwartz, who wrote the book The Art of the Deal, has since disowned Trump. He was a ghostwriter. He didn't think Trump ever even read the book, never mind having written it. And the reason why Trump is a bad dealmaker is because to make a deal with somebody, you've got to make a promise and deliver on it. And Trump has a clear record of breaking his promises. He's done it right through his years of a state agency and with Trump University and so on, long before he even became president. Of course, in his role as president, he's been a serial liar and a deal breaker. So really, I think first of all, it's hard to respect him, but he doesn't respect people either who don't stand up to him. He's got complete contempt for what he calls losers. But he also wants to turn people into losers, which is what he's done to a certain extent to Starmer. And, you know, it is wrong to say that Starmer's agreed a deal with him. This deal that has eluded the UK for years. All that happened was that Starmer managed to negotiate a slight reduction in what was threatened, which was unreasonable in the first place. Trump's attitude is a zero-sum gain one. And I think you've got to understand what that means is that he doesn't think that his friends can benefit from anything unless somebody else loses, and therefore it's in his interest to make people lose. It's a totally transactional approach, and I don't actually believe that you can do business with people like that. I think what you've got to do is you've got to show what you stand for. I think in that sense Mark Carney has done the right thing, and I agree with you on that point.
Peter, I think you're right that Trump's track record over many years is that he doesn't actually stick to the deals that he does. You remember when he was president first time around, he did a deal with Canada on trade. He signed it. And then now in his second term, he actually said, who was stupid enough to sign that deal? And he had to be reminded that it was himself. And he's now broken that. And that's one of the things I worry about. Not only are we not really getting a very good deal from Starmer's approach, but we don't know if we're really getting any deal whatsoever. It creates massive uncertainty. It's so bad for our economy, and that's why we've got to do other things. And it's why, as you know, Liberal Democrats have argued that we need to get closer ties with our European neighbours. And, you know, I'd ask a question to listeners. How much of a mistake have we made turning away from Europe and being forced to turn ourselves even more towards the USA when it's got someone like President Trump in the White House? We get no say about who occupies that great office. And I think we've created a real rod for our own back. We've reduced our options by not working closely with our European allies, particularly on the economy. And I think that's hurting people. I think it's hurting them in their wages. I think it's hurting them in prices in the shops. And I think it's hurting our economy. It's why we perform so badly compared to other countries. So question to you, should Keir Starmer be turning closer towards Europe? Liberal Democrats think he should. I think he does. Do you? What do you think about how we can create an alternative to actually improve our negotiating position with Trump? Let's go to you, the callers. I've got Ray from Witten. Ray, what would you like to tell me?
Hi there, Ed. Just wanted to start by saying I vowed never to vote Lib Dem again after the tuition fee debacle of a number of years ago. And now that you're in charge, I've completely changed my mind.
Oh, thank you very much for that.
I wanted to say that to start with. In terms of Starmer, or cautious Keir, in terms of whether it's the Trump issue, the EU trade, and all of many other issues I could mention, he's really losing a major opportunity. He's got a massive majority. He's doing nothing in terms of the European issue to get trade going, and he's going to be out of office and hopefully not with you-know-who in charge in the future, but he's taking a massive risk because he's too cautious. And it's, oh, yes, it's about Trump. Yes, it's about the EU and about not having a proper relationship to fix the Brexit damage. And he's got the opportunity and he's not taking it. He's not taking it with the EU. He's not taking it with Trump. Having a nice little cozy fireside chat doesn't actually change things. And we've hardly got any better deal than the Europeans anyway. So I completely agree. But I'm so disappointed because I expected better from Keir Starmer. And I was an ex-Labour voter in the past. And I can't see any reason to vote for them again.
Very depressing. Well, I think people are disappointed by his approach in a lot of things. But let's go to those people who do actually think he's doing the right job. We've got WhatsApp here from Beatrice. Beatrice says, I think Keir Starmer deserves praise for his strategy of engagement with Trump. With getting one of the least worst tariffs from the USA in the world and bringing together European leaders to support Ukraine and push Trump away from Trump's wishes to give Putin all he wants. However, Starmer needs to apply that diplomacy to other issues such as Gaza and Trump taking the USA into an authoritarian oligarchy and police state. Thank you, Beatrice. I really appreciate that. You know, I really strongly believe that we could be making a historic mistake here. If we don't improve the allies to the UK in Europe, in the Commonwealth, we often talk about the Commonwealth, but we should far more because they're getting a bit hit by Trump. If we don't do that, we're doing a disservice to our country. We need to make sure that Britain can stand tall in the world. You know, let's face it, we have a proud history. We're a great nation. Many people look to us for so many things. We have one of the finest armies in the world. I think we should be proud to be British. But I think successive governments have undermined that. Not least with not standing tall in Europe, not standing tall with our Commonwealth allies. And I think if we were, I think we wouldn't be taking the approach that Starmer is with Trump, in my view, though not necessarily in everyone's view, no great benefit. Now I've got another WhatsApp here from Jim. Trump's job is to keep his country and his citizens safe and to prioritise American interests. He is putting America first, as it's his job, and the very reason he was elected to the White House. No country has a better trading position now than when he started his tariffs. Europe is now rightly paying more for its own security. It shouldn't be down to the American taxpayer time and time again. Maybe if our PM looked out for our country as much as Trump does with America, this government wouldn't be so universally hated. That's Jim in Lincoln. Jim, thank you very much for that opinion. I don't disagree that Trump's job is to look out for the United States. But what I would argue, and many American politicians are arguing, the approach he's taking is not in America's interest. Getting tougher with Russia is in American interest. Working with long-term allies who share the values of America is in America's interest. And some people are really worried about prices going up in America because of his trade tariffs. But we've got Elise, who's sent in another WhatsApp. Europe feels rudderless. Accustomed to the US taking the lead on the world stage, there seems to be a leadership vacuum. Much like standing up to a bully, it takes one brave person or one country to be the first to do it before others follow suit. Perhaps the UK should be that brave country. I'm pretty sure I agree with that sentiment, Elise. I think the UK should stand up tougher, should work with allies, should be tough when we disagree with people like Donald Trump. Now I've got another caller, Raj from Northwood. Raj, what would you like to say?
Well, I think Trump is doing an excellent job for his country. He's a very strong president, and we here in England would be doing much, much better if our politicians fought for us as hard as he's fighting for America.
Interesting point, Raj. You know, I think there is something what you say. I think we need our politicians to fight for our country. And the question, though, is the best way of doing that, Raj. I don't know what you think, but I think to fight for your country, you've got to be clear on your values and try and make sure that you are leading in the world, bringing people with you. Because if you're going to stand up to bullies like Vladimir Putin, you've got to work with others. What do you think, Raj?
Well, he's certainly trying to work with Vladimir Putin. I mean, there's not a single European president or prime minister has even managed to talk to Putin. At least Trump has got Putin around the table to start discussing things.
But do you think he's getting anywhere with Putin, really? Do you think...
Well, of course he is. It's a process. You know, it's not going to happen overnight.
But you even agree there shouldn't be a ceasefire. We're seeing Ukrainian towns and cities bombed on a daily basis. He's not stopped any of the killing.
He's got Putin talking, which is more than any European politician has been able to do.
Well, yeah, but I mean, talking, I think he's putting him off. But Raj, I respect your view. Before I go to the news, I want to remind you of the Prime Minister's visit to the Oval Office back in February.
This is a letter from His Majesty the King. It's an invitation for a second state visit. This is really special. This has never happened before. This is unprecedented. I think that just symbolises the strength of the relationship between us. So this is a very special letter. I think the last state visit was a tremendous success.
It was.
His Majesty the King wants to make this even better than that. So this is truly historic, an unprecedented second state visit. He wants to talk that through with you.
And that says at Windsor. That's really something.
Yes. What I haven't got yet is your answer. I do need to...
The answer is yes. On behalf of our wonderful First Lady, Melania, and myself, the answer is yes, and we look forward to being there and honouring the King and honouring really your country. Your country is a fantastic country, and it'll be our honour to be there. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. President. I shall happily take that back to His Majesty.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know what? That was the beginning of the charm offensive from Starmer on Trump. I'm not sure it's working. Let's see what happens with the state visit next month. But I hope he's going to be tougher than he's been today. Here's the news.
A health minister's told LBC that anti-vaccine conspiracy theorists must be defeated. The government, which is trying to increase uptake, will roll out free chickenpox jabs in England and Wales from January. Israel's military has declared Gaza City a dangerous combat zone. It means there will no longer be daytime pauses in fighting to allow for the distribution of aid. Judges will rule this afternoon in the latest stage of a legal battle over an asylum hotel in Epping. The Home Office and the hotel's owner are seeking to challenge an injunction banning its use for housing migrants. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Swollen gums, bad breath, bleeding whilst brushing. All signs of potential gum disease, a major cause of tooth loss. At Darwood & Tanner, our expert periodontists can help restore your gums and save your teeth. Using a range of cutting-edge procedures, from minimally invasive to advanced corrective surgery, we ensure that you are always in the best hands. For our most comprehensive, tailored and complete gum disease treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at weebanycar.com.
Ed Davey on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Hi, you're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC. We're having a chat about Donald Trump and whether we think Keir Starmer's cozying up approach to the White House and this particular president is the right one. Do you agree? Should it be tougher? Really keen to get your calls. So I've got Saab from Cambridge. Saab, what's your view?
Hello, Mr. Davey. Great to talk to you. I'm a long-time listener on LBC, first-time caller. So,
all right. You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
Thank you. So, yes, I think one of the issues that I see is that, you know, we've got geopolitical axes happening, you know, with China on one hand, on one side. We have Americans on the other side. And there is a middle piece of Europeans who really need strength to have a voice on the table. I think more alignment with the Europeans is needed, and this is where Starmer is kind of not taking the bull by the horn and taking and saying, you know, we Europeans need to stand up for our stability, our growth, and we'll have deals with people like Canada or Mexico just to get more power in Europe. And I think that's kind of that conversation needs to be had right now. It's right in the news. It's always about Americans and Chinese, but Europe's nowhere.
Yeah,
it's nowhere.
Saab, I completely agree with you. I think we need Europe to speak more loudly. And it's been frustrating for me to see some European leaders a bit weak, to be honest, because I do believe that we need to improve our relationship with Europe and we need Europe to be stronger. That would be better for our growth, our economy, as well as our security. And clearly, I think if we engage better. And to be fair to Starmer, he has had this reset program, hasn't he, with the European Union. I think it's very timid. I think it needs to go much, much further. But he's made a better attempt than his predecessor, the Tories, but that's not saying very much, is it? Listen, Saab, thank you for your call. Let me go to Aidan now in Newcastle-under-Lyme in Staffordshire. Aidan, what would you like to say?
Hi, Ed. Wonderful to speak to you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Go for it.
Yeah, so I think Starmer's done a reasonable job with the cards that he's been dealt. I think he knew what he was dealing with regards to Trump, and I think he tried to balance it quite well. He knows that he's a guy that can be tricky to deal with. He knows he can go back on his deals, and I think he tried to balance it quite well with some reasonable statesmanship.
Aidan, listen, you make a fair point. I don't want to give the impression that I think this is an easy job for Keir Starmer, right? He must have been dreading the idea of Donald Trump winning the presidential election last November. I mean, can you imagine? They had to plan for that or plan for the Kamala Harris winning. And I bet the plan for President Trump was not as inviting. And so he's had a tricky job. Completely get that. And it's not easy. And I think it's incumbent on opposition politicians who want to criticise to at least admit that. And I'm very happy to admit that, Aidan. All I'm saying is I think his approach isn't ultimately going to be the right one. We don't know yet, right? Do we? We can't know how this is all going to play out. But my strong suspicion is taking the approach of Canada's Mark Carney or Australia's Anthony Albanese, where they're a bit tougher, and trying to show you have an alternative is the right approach. But Aidan, come back on me. Do you agree, or do you think Starmer's got it absolutely spot on?
Well, I think partly that he's representing other people when he's going over there as well, isn't he? And he didn't really want to embarrass the king either. So I do think he's still got it right, to be honest with you.
Yeah, OK. Listen, thank you for your call, Aidan. Really appreciate that. Now we're going to Northern Ireland, speak to Maurice in Lisbon. Maurice, what do you want to say?
I was kind of messing in to say, I think a lot of the... While it was cringeworthy to watch, Keir's approach was probably the right way to go about it. You know, you need to sort of keep Trump on side in that sense. But I don't think that was the main driver in us getting a better deal. I think really that stems from Trump's dislike of the EU. And it's really, by giving the UK a better deal, it shows how Brexit is successful and pushes that narrative that we're better off being outside the EU, and it gives those EU sceptics more fuel, which is those sort of right-wing groups that he's much more in line with.
Now, that's really interesting. You're saying that Trump was playing some politics there, and it was more that he was anti-EU than pro-the UK. That's, I've not heard that one before. Is that what you're saying, Maurice?
Yeah, I think totally that was a key driver for him, because it allows those elements in France and Italy to then push for the why they should break away from the EU, because look at the UK getting a better deal because they did Brexit, ignoring all the other harms that Brexit has brought to us, of course.
Because most people argue that it's Vladimir Putin who's trying to break up the EU, because he doesn't like the EU because it's stronger together, and they push back against Russia under Putin. Now, so you're now saying Trump's almost taken the same position?
I think so. So if you look at the EU's been able to stand up to his bully tactics when it comes to trade tariffs, and they're in a position where they're strong enough to retaliate back, whereas a lot of other countries are rushing to get the deals. I think one of your previous callers says, you know, he takes £100 off you and you're grateful he gives you back 20. Whereas the EU's been able to take a slightly more forceful approach because of their size. So it certainly works in his favour if he can weaken them. You know, you lose a couple more members out of the EU, then they lose an awful lot of strength. So, and it also helps bolster the campaigns of those right-wing elements to try and come into power where they'd be much more in line with his approach on things.
Yeah, and the latest, isn't it, is on American technology companies, because Trump is threatening us, he's threatening the EU, that if we're nasty to American tech and, you know, go ahead with our rules to protect children online, go ahead with our digital service tax, those sort of things, he's going to retaliate. And so there's another test, isn't there, for the UK and the EU, and it'd be interesting to see how that develops.
Yeah, and again, being the smaller party, we're probably in a much weaker position to stand up to that than what the EU would be.
Yeah, interesting.
And so by belittling the EU, it works for him.
Maurice, thank you very much for that call. A really interesting point. Can I now go to John in Cambridge? John, what do you want to say?
Hi, I'm 17. Schools in this country, they teachers, they have to promote British values, uh-huh, democracy, the rule of law, uh-huh, respect, tolerance. And I just think these are principles which Trump has consistently, like, he's shown contempt for. And I think that even if Starmer is engaging with him behind closed doors, it's not enough. But I'm really worried that it's setting a terrible precedent, and that the optics of everything, meeting Putin one week and meeting the meeting the king the next, it's throwing that all out the window.
That really interesting, because, I mean, I always thought that British values, the ones that you refer to, rule of law, respect, mutual respect, tolerance, those sorts of things, they were ones that America also stood up for and championed. And you're right, Trump doesn't seem to want to do that. I mean, interesting, you're a younger caller than some we've had. Do you find young people support Trump, support Keir Starmer's approach to Trump? What are your friends saying?
Yeah, I mean, it stuns me. I think he's probably the most unpopular politician I can think of among people my age in this country. And the fact that we have politicians like Starmer who are constantly trying to appease him, I mean, I don't understand how that's sustainable with the youth vote, and yeah.
Well, interesting. I think young people are pretty worried about this, but thank you very much for that call. You know, really interested to keep your calls coming. You know, if I was Keir Starmer, one of the things I would do with respect to the Trump relationship is actually show to Donald Trump that we have friends elsewhere in the world. particularly in Europe, but the Commonwealth as well. Because I want Trump to realise, because I think, although, as we heard from a caller, he didn't actually write the book, The Art of the Deal, I still think he respects people who are strong. He may not say that, but he knows if you're stronger, he's got to treat you differently. And I think we need to, and Keir Starmer needs to, show that we're not just by ourselves, but we have all these friends and allies. And that's what I would do as a key part of the strategy. But let me go to you guys, to Ashok in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Ashok, what's your view?
I'm just listening to your remarks, you know, these remarks I made to your researcher. Actually, absolutely, Starmer should stand firm, you know, in front of Putin. If Putin, Trump, if Trump is doing something for his country, Starmer, or we have the same right to do for our country. Mm-hmm. Starmer should learn this from Modi. Modi has put up his own friendship with Trump online to protect the safe and safeguard the interest of the farmers, fishermen, other people to from getting the U.S. companies into India. Plus, if the tariff they have in India, which is 50% now from the last 2 days now, there are 60% of them are exempted. Medicines, car parts, and other things, electronics, iPhones. It's very convenient for Trump not to put any tariff on this 60% thing which he import from India, but also put 40% out. But Indian traders are very resilient. What they have started looking at the market on the other side. And India is a 68% consumer-based economy. Only 32% is exported.
Ashok, it's fascinating, you know, because India is a huge economy. As Starmer would say, and you know, with some justification, they've got a trade deal with India, and he's really proud of that. I personally think it's not the biggest trade deal around. And I wonder, now Modi's government in India is seeing these huge threats from Starmer, Trump with these huge American tariffs. I wonder whether Starmer would get a better deal with India as one of our close Commonwealth allies. That's an interesting thought. So thank you very much for your call, Ashok. You're listening to me, Ed Davey. We've got time for a few more calls before the end of the hour on this whole debate on Trump. The time now is 11:45.
LBC. Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What?
Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist?
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville, made to be enjoyed, not endured.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, love. Just spoke to Zara from St. James's Place.
Your financial advisor?
Yeah, we've made a plan. Retire early, travel more. Peru first.
Ooh, ¿cómo estás?
Bless you. And Zara's plan means I can help more with your house deposit.
Thanks again, Dad.
Planning for the future calls for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Ed Davey on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
You're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC. We've just had a WhatsApp from Manjit. He says Starmer's strategy only works if, in parallel, he's working harder to get closer to Europe. Sadly, the US is going to be a very different and horrible place, in my opinion, in 4 years' time. The UK and everyone else, for that matter, needs to wise up and prepare, else they will be forever bullied with tariffs until they are crushed. Thank you, Manjit, for that. Can I go to a caller now? Kennedy from Cheltenham, what would you like to say?
Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you're doing a good job. Well, what that last message said, I'm sort of with that. I mean, I think Starmer's done a pretty good job with Trump. You know, it's very difficult. You've got to show diplomacy, but at the same time, you know, he has disagreed with Trump in front of him as well. So he has done that, but it's difficult. But as a whole, I think, and this is what the last caller said, you know, USA under Trump, he's saying USA first. Well, I think the world needs to start saying USA last, and we need to start preparing this world so that we're not so reliant on the USA. It's going to take a long time, but it's entirely possible, because it's the way I see it, the way Trump's acting, he's bordering, if not already, a dictator, and we can't be relying on someone that is not an ally that we can rely on anymore, as far as I'm concerned. So I was very disappointed in Europe's stance. I felt they just rolled over too quickly. But we just need to start preparing so we're not so reliant on the USA. That's my opinion.
But Kennedy, you actually think Starmer's getting it about right?
I think he's had moments where he hasn't got it really badly wrong. I mean, like I say, I think this state visit, and I think it's making the whole of the UK sick to the stomach. I would have thought. I think his approval rating in this country is, I think, his 75% do not like him. I think it's something like that. And to give a guy, someone like that, what he's doing to his country, the way he's been, he's so anti-immigrant, what the guy's advice are doing, it's horrendous what's happening in the USA. So to be inviting someone like that, as I think this is a James O'Brien saying, to tickle his toes, you know, this is our king, you know, they're doing it for a reason, but it kind of doesn't sit well with so many people that a guy like this should be getting that sort of treatment and money spent as well, how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, well, so I agree with your overall view on Trump. I think across the piece we've been too understanding of him, and we've not been tough enough. And I think it's partly because we've always wanted to be close to the USA, and that's long term. That's the right thing to do, of course. But he's a very different president, isn't he? Very different from anything we've seen before.
Well, this is the thing, and it's like, I would always say that we would see the USA as an ally. But you know, to those pictures the other day when he was stood on a red carpet applauding Putin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like being in some sort of dystopian movie. I'm waiting to be woken up. It's you cannot recognise the USA in its present guise. I'm sure a lot. You know, I've heard a lot of Trump supporters are just horrified that they've made this huge mistake. And I don't know where the USA is going to be by the end of his term, and when this talk of him not leaving, you know, so that's another huge worry. So if America it's a dictatorship, that's not an ally we're going to be wanting, is it?
Well, you're in, that's really interesting. By the way, Trump's ratings aren't very good either. I think he doesn't like talking about them, but Trump's ratings have gone south very badly.
Is that in the USA?
Yeah, in the USA.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, I don't know who the people are still supporting them. I think these people have just got their heads in the sand, haven't they? But yeah, I'd be very concerned if I was living in the USA. Very concerned.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that call. I want to go now to Ian in Watford. Ian, what's your beef?
My beef is the fact that we would like, generally, not everybody looks at both sides of the coin. Trump is faced with a massive debt mountain. It's a bit, people like complaining. It's like somebody complaining that somebody with a credit card is not spending enough money in their shop. And that's what it's about. It's mostly about to do with money. Europe particularly has earned a lot of money out of America with all the cars and everything else. And his job is really to try and balance the books a bit. Unfortunately, most of you politicians have lost what we learned in our very early books on economics, balance of payments, and which most of countries are not really focusing on. That's why they'll end up borrowing money, because they have not worked hard enough on their balance of payments.
So what do you think...
Did you know what balance of payments meant?
I do indeed.
But why don't anybody talk about it anymore?
Well, I think it should be talked about more. I think that's a very fair point, Ian. But can I take you back to what you're saying about Donald Trump? Are you saying that all these policies that he's got are going to help the American economy?
Well, yes, he's trying to squeeze the borrowing down. If there's less stuff being imported, the debt will start to go down.
Well, interesting idea. Let's see what happens. The initial statistics aren't that good for America. If you remember, he didn't like some statistics, so he sacked the head of the statistics in the United States. So let's see what happens. But thank you very much for your call, Ian. Go to David now in Teignmouth in Devon. David, what do you want to say?
I just want to say, do we want to make a closer relationship with Canada, Australia and New Zealand and act as a bridge with the EU for them? Australia's in the in Eurovision, and Canada seems very pro-us at the moment with Mark Carney, a liberal prime minister.
Yeah.
I'm sure you like that. Do we want to make a closer link with Canada, Australia and New Zealand and work with the EU and be a bridge for them to for trade and for defence?
Oh, David, fantastic. I couldn't agree more, not just because Mark Carney, Prime Minister of Canada, is a Liberal, but I think what Trump has said about Canada has been absolutely shocking, the way he's almost said it should become another state of the United States. I mean, how offensive is that? And let's remember, given we've been talking earlier about the state banquet, King Charles is the head of state of Canada. And I don't even remember, David, a few weeks ago, maybe a few months now, he went over to the opening of the Parliament in Canada and made a very diplomatic speech. But the mood music was, you know, King Charles is supporting Canadian independence, and quite right, too. So I think every which way we can, we should show we are a close ally of Canada and Australia and build on those Commonwealth link. So thank you very much, David, for that call. I've got a WhatsApp now from Dylan. Dylan says, I think Trump is a genuine threat to UK national security, as he's looking like at the end of his term he isn't going to step down, even making hats saying Trump 2028. I've seen those hats, Dylan. We need to decrease reliance on the US as rapidly as possible and strengthen our ties with the EU as a matter of national security. We should buy not only British, but also buy European to protect our country and our economy. Thank you very much, Dylan, for those thoughts. I certainly think we need more allies, whether it's in the Commonwealth or the EU. Now, let's go to Murdo in Auchtermuchty in East Scotland. Murdo.
Hi, Ed. How are you getting on?
Really well. Good to hear you. What are you going to say?
Good. You too. Yeah, interesting. Ed, right, just a question to you. If you were the Prime Minister at the moment, what would you do to liberate Ukraine? Or would you admit that it's an impossible situation? You know, what can Keir Starmer or any British leader do to push Russia out of the Donbass, out of Crimea? How would you deal with that? You're in charge.
Great question, Murdo. Well, I actually think some of the things that Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak and indeed Keir Starmer have done are the right things. I like to, you know, be cross-party where we can be. I think supporting Ukraine militarily, sending them weapons, is the right thing to help them repulse the Russians. But I think we should do more. You probably know, Murdo, that there is about £23 billion, maybe more than that, of frozen Russian assets in London. Around Europe, there's about £250 billion worth of frozen Russian assets. I've argued in the House of Commons we should seize those assets and use them to support the war effort of Ukraine against Russia. And do you know what? Yeah. It's not just about financing and helping. It would also send a signal to those oligarchs supporting Putin that they need to change. Is that the sort of thing you'd like to see, Murdo?
These things are all good, but I feel sorry for the Ukrainian people and the fact that we're giving them false hope, because it's what we're doing now is we're kind of trying to turn one playground bully against another, rather than say, right, we're going to stand up to the bullies. And, you know, right at the start of the war, we heard the RAF could go and knock out the Russian Air Force in 5 hours. And in my view, you would say, well, crack on, do it. Just go and do it then. If you think you can do that, do it. But we've not. We're 3 years into this. You know, like you say, you could seize assets. But there's people dying day in, day out, day in, day out.
So, Murdo, are you arguing that we should send British forces over to fight the Russians?
Well, you've got two options. One is you've got to sit down with Ukraine and say, look, we've let you down. This is a neutral territory. We've not defended you. We're really sorry, but this war has to stop, so we're going to have to give in. Or we go gung-ho and say, right, what the cavalry's about to approach, Putin, you've got 2 weeks, get out, or we're going to push you out, and we'll push you right back to Moscow. These are your two options. This talking about seizing assets, all it's doing is wasting time and costing lives.
Murdo, that's a very bold proposal. Thank you. I think people are worried about the nuclear weapons that Putin has. I think that's probably why they haven't gone quite as far as you're advocating. But can I thank you for your call, Murdo? Can I thank for all of you who've called in the last hour? I think we had a good discussion. I think probably on balance, most of you agree with me that we should be tougher with Donald Trump than Keir Starmer has, although there were calls thinking that he's got it about right. I think we all agree that it's a tough gig, and that Donald Trump is a tricky one to deal with. In the next hour, I'm going to be talking about care. Change the tone and the subject completely. Come back to the UK, to the millions of people who look after family members, loved ones who need care, and how we can support those amazing carers better, why we've not done so in the past. I'm really keen to get your calls on care, particularly if you're a carer and you are looking after a loved one. How could you get a bit more help so you can do what you want to do? Listen, thank you for your calls. Looking forward to what comes next. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, on the LBC. The time is now 12 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the government says it's working with GPs and schools to tackle vaccine disinformation. A minister's told LBC it's become a big problem, alongside a decade-long decline in childhood vaccination rates. Young children in England and Wales will be offered a free chickenpox jab from January. The Shadow Home Office Minister, Matt Vickers, has backed the move.
We would welcome vaccination, we welcome greater access to vaccination, but one of the problems is our GPs are a huge part of our NHS. They're incredibly important, but we're placing greater burdens and pressure on them. We need to look again. The last government brought out Pharmacy First, which meant that we could alleviate some of that pressure on GPs so they could continue to do the great work they do.
A government minister has warned the closure of migrant hotels could lead to people living destitute in the streets. The Court of Appeal is due to rule this afternoon on whether to overturn an injunction blocking asylum seekers being housed in Epping. Stephen Kinnock has cautioned against a disorderly closure of the accommodation. Israel says its military has recovered the bodies of two hostages held in Gaza. The IDF has also described Gaza City as a dangerous combat zone. It means there will no longer be daytime pauses in fighting to allow for the distribution of aid in the area. European defence ministers are meeting in Denmark to discuss the war in Ukraine. The talks follow the deaths of at least 23 people in a Russian drone and missile assault on Kyiv yesterday. An EU compound and the British Council office were damaged in the raid. Industry leaders have told LBC that Britain's creative sector is facing an existential threat from artificial intelligence. Ministers have been accused of legitimising wide-scale copyright theft by failing to bring in AI protections. The film director, Chris Columbus, has told LBC that technology is changing by the minute.
There are a lot of people saying just use AI and use it to the best of your abilities, but I think it's growing much faster than we can handle at this point. So time will tell.
The government says it is firmly committed to ensuring rights holders are compensated fairly. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 16 points at 9,200. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers for many this afternoon. Some of that rain will be heavy with the odd rumble of thunder. A high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ed Davey.
Good afternoon. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC. In this hour, I want to change the tone and change the subject. I want to talk about care. I want to talk about carers, family carers, people who look after loved ones, friends, neighbours who look after people who are elderly, who are ill, who are disabled, people who need others to give them that special care. And there's a personal reason why I want to talk about it. I've been a carer much of my life. My dad died when I was four. Mum was left bringing me and my two brothers up. We were, my eldest brother was nine, middle brother was seven. I was four when dad died. And she did an amazing job, but she sadly became terminally ill when I was 12. And I nursed her as a young carer. I didn't know I was didn't know that term back then, but as a young carer with my family until she died when I was 15. Very close to my grandmother, and she looked after me along with others, my brother and so on. And then when she became elderly, I did quite a lot of care for her, looked after her. And now I'm a parent with my wife, Emily, and we have two lovely kids. And my eldest, John, he's now 17, but he's profoundly disabled. We don't know what he's got. It's undiagnosed neurological problem, something in his brain that doesn't quite work right. And it means he can't walk properly by himself. He'll fall over. He can't really talk very well. He's really poor communications, and he's got learning disabilities. So he needs 24/7 care. So I spent a lot of my life caring, I still do, on a daily basis. But in my experience, what I've go through, what I've gone through, is so common to millions of people. And I think there'll be loads of you listening to this programme who are caring for loved ones now, today. And maybe you used to care for someone who may have sadly died, or hopefully got better. But caring is something we don't talk about enough, even though so many of us do it. And so I want to hear your experiences. And I want to hear particularly what more could we do to help family carers. This is something I'm passionate about. I actually wrote a book called Why I Care, Why Care Matters. Told my story, as you've heard, but also told the story of four other carers who had very different experiences to me, and then talked about how we can improve the lives of carers. Loads of ideas in my book, if you want to buy it. but seriously, I want to hear from you about how we could improve the lives of carers. And there is a serious political part of this. I don't think carers are thought about when we think about the NHS and social care. You know, politicians talk about improve our health service, how we need to get social care, but they never bring in the millions of people who are doing it every day. And I think that's why they're getting it wrong, frankly. They have a very statist approach. What money are we going to spend on this? What governments are going to do on this? How are we going to organise our bureaucracy and all the rest of it? And I think they're missing a massive trick. Because I think if you really help the millions of family carers out there, people who really care about their loved ones, know them inside out, if they help them just a bit more, doesn't quite a lot in my view, but they could provide even more care than they do for longer, better. And I think we'd be a happier society. I think we'd take pressure off the NHS. I think it'd be just care better. And I've talked about a caring society, a caring nation, and something I just feel passionately about. And when I engage with young carers, really young people looking after mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, when I've engaged with people who are quite old themselves, but they're looking after a partner who's got dementia, trying to help get more help for dementia carers, looking after maybe a husband or a wife or a partner with that terrible disease, and trying to make sure they're not so isolated and get that extra bit of help. People, and I know lots of these who've got disabled children, and the struggles they go through. I just think we could do just a bit better, and it wouldn't cost a lot of money. That is my view, and I'm just keen to hear what you think. So you can call me on 0345 60 60 973. You can WhatsApp on the same number. You can text 84850. I want to hear your experiences. And you know what? Caring, and I'm really clear about this, it isn't all tough. I mean, a lot of it is tough, right? It can be isolating, and you have to deal with things like poo and pee and toilets and dressing people and all that sort of stuff, which no one, at least of all politicians, talk about. You've got to do all that stuff. But you can also have great relationships. I mean, I got very close to my mum when she was dying of cancer. I used to lie on her bed watching TV programmes, really special memories. And although it was tragic seeing her die, I got very close to her. Got very close to my nana. I used to go and stay with her in my university holidays, and you know, I'd be driving up from uni and in my little Ford Fiesta, which I'd inherited from my granddad actually, and I'd stop just a few miles from her, from my nana's, and I'd say, "Look, nana, I'm in a big traffic jam. I'm going to be late," and then I'd arrived 5 minutes later and surprise her. And one day I did that, and actually I was really late, but my nana went and hid in the cupboard, thinking that she could surprise me. And then when I got there 2 hours later, she said she was very cross that, for once I actually was late. So I had great fun with my nana. I was very, very close to her. And I'm very close to my son too. We have lots of games with his parrot. We call Naughty Parrot. His this little thing he's got, which is like a head of a cow, we call Mooey. We have lots of fun and have a brilliant relationship. And I do want to get that over when you're talking about family carers. It can be tough, but you also get these brilliant relationships. And I just want to hear about your experience as a carer, and particularly how we can make life just a little bit easier for you. So let me go to callers. I've got Celia from Tenterden in Kent. Celia.
Hi, hello.
Hi. Hi, Celia. What have you got to say?
I would say that as a parent of a disabled child, I think what's really difficult is the fact that the services are so different everywhere. It's not a national service that is clear and you know what support you can get. You know, it changes from county to county. It depends what charities run in the counties as well. And that can be a real minefield to go through. You know, as a parent carer, you're not only parenting your child, you're caring for them, you're an advocate, you're a PA. There's so many kind of facets to being a carer. And just having all of the information in one place that is the same for everywhere would make things so much easier for carers. It'd be, you know, one less thing to think about.
I think, Celia, that's a great idea. Thank you, by the way, for what you do and for sharing your story, because it is tough. It's sometimes tough to talk about, but thank you for sharing it. And this point you make about a postcode lottery and trying to find out what is out there for you is absolutely on the money. You know, sometimes you end up finding stuff out much later than you might have done.
Absolutely.
And you learn it from other parents, don't you?
That's true. Yeah, I've had experiences where I've looked on the internet. I've, you know, gone to places where they've got the leaflets and signposting websites, etc. But sometimes you can find out things too late, or you've passed. You know, there's no set schedule to go through, and it's really difficult to find out the information. And like I say, you might find out about charity or something, but then due to funding it may have stopped, or you know, it's a constantly changing picture that you have to keep up with, and just, you know, it's just something else that you have to deal with, along with doctor's appointments and, you know, all the other things that we have to deal with. And it would just be so much easier if it was clearer for people.
You used a word there, which I know if my wife was here, she'd say, "Oh my God, that's the word I hate the most." Signposting. You know, when they say we're going to signpost you to this, and you know, you think basically you're fobbing me off because what you're telling me is available isn't available, and you don't really know about it. And I think you're spot on there. I mean, Celia, what could we do to make your life and your son's life and your family's life just a little bit easier? Is it putting all this information together in some place, or what is it you'd like to do? Because it's tough, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think, as you say, having it all in one place and making sure it's updated and knowing people. I found out from things from parents about local clubs that I wasn't aware about. So whether that gets filtered through schools or through, you know, one specific website that deals with the whole of the UK, and then maybe, you know, it could break it down by region. But then you've also got all of the services that you can access through the UK, all in one big area that you could have a look at, you know, the website or meeting points or something in different counties.
We've got a great organisation in my community called Kingston Carers Network, and they help carers, whether they're looking after disabled children like you and me, or they're looking after a loved one with dementia, and they do a fantastic job. And you know, I wouldn't ever use the word signpost for the reasons we talked about before. But I would always say go to Kingston Carers Network for people in my area who need someone to tell them what's available for them, to provide them with, you know, clubs and outings and that sort of, you know, personal help, that relationship help that is so important. Do you have something like that in your area?
Yes, there are a few in our area, and actually recently there seems to be, I'd say sort of since COVID, a lot more seem to have started. But again, it's finding out about it, because there's one that I found out through another parent at school, which I wasn't aware of, and it was really close to me. And like I say, I'm on the Facebook groups and I look regularly, and sometimes it's just amazing what you can miss. So, again, it's just finding out this information that you're not always having to hunt for or spend your time looking for.
Does your son have a diagnosis, Celia?
No, he doesn't. He's actually got an unknown neurological disorder.
Gosh, that's just like my son. That is just like my son.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we haven't got a diagnosis at all.
No diagnosis at all, no. So we've done, you know, every test that you can think of, you know, brain MRIs, genetic testing. And,
sounds familiar.
Enigma. But a beautiful enigma.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. I mean, the most important moment for me, well, the most touching moment, was when my son, who really struggles to speak, and I said, he said daddy for the first time when he was eight.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that was a fantastic
amazing,
day for me.
Yeah. Isn't it? It's those really small little things that perhaps other parents might take for granted or even miss when their child develops quite quickly. You know, it's those little things that just make it just, absolutely amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
John's my best alarm clock, because he said, I can hear him in the morning about 6 o'clock saying, get up, daddy. and if I go to the loo first, he'll say, get off the toilet. And he can't say much more than that, but he knows those words to tell me what to do. Well, thank you so much for your call. We're going to the ads now. You're listening to me, Ed Davey. Call me on 0345 60 60 973. The time is now 12:16.
This is LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream, and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply. Subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable, and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Renault. An electric car grant is good, but an electric car grant on an award-winning Renault, where we do all the paperwork for you. Incroyable. Renault range now available with the electric car grant and 0% APR representative. Search Renault electric car grant. Order by 30th of September 2025. Exclude Channel Islands, PCP Mobilized Financial Services, minimum deposit required, 18 plus, T's and C's apply.
Ed Davey on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
You're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC. We're talking about caring and carers, people looking after their loved ones, close family members. It's something I've had a lot of experience of in my life, looking after my mum when she was terminally ill, my nana, and now my son. And there's one thing that I wanted to mention, it's quite sad in one level, is you're always thinking about the future of your loved one, and in my case, my son, and what's going to happen when I'm not there. And when I talk to other parents of disabled kids, it's their sort of room 101, you know, their nightmare, you know, who is going to love them? Because no one's going to hold them and love them like that you do as a parent. And is that sort of situation where it's very difficult to prepare for. And maybe some of you have had that, those thoughts, those worries. And I would like to have more of a debate about that, how we could help parent carers think about and plan for the future of a very vulnerable child. Let me go to some more carers. First of all, Kerry in Havant, Hampshire. What would you like to say?
Hi there, Ed. Thanks for taking my call and thanks for choosing this topic. I'm actually a doctor, but also a daughter of Alzheimer's, essentially. That's what my father's got.
All right, okay. Sorry to
hear. And thank you. It's been interesting over the past decade or so watching a decline and the need for care, both coming from us and some external carers. And one of the things I don't understand is why we've not got carers as part of the NHS, you know, especially now the Department of Health and Social Care. And I've witnessed, you know, some of the carers coming in who are maybe 18, they've had 4 days training and they really kind of have no insight and skill set to help care in that environment. And the other end, the really good carers, either interesting, a lot of people who've been mothers who then, you know, come in and start taking this role, or they themselves have had a relative with dementia. The good ones, the really good ones, get poached to go and work in the office. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think it's, you know, I'm estimating here, but around 50% of what's paid for privately for the care doesn't go to the actual person doing the caring. And I just think, you know, there's money going into the system, and obviously the big picture needs to be looked at how it's funded. But I think those that need to pay, certainly I on as LPA for my father, would rather that money was going towards a health and social care system, and that the carers who were good, you know, they progress up the pay scale rather than get poached to go and do admin in the office.
Yeah.
And they get rewarded for being good carers. Rather than it being so low paid that actually, you know, someone went off to work in Tesco's because they could get better money there.
You know, Kerry, it's so interesting you made that point. I mean, you're obviously speaking from a lot of knowledge, both as a carer for your dad and as a doctor. One thing I feel strongly is that we don't value carers enough, not just family carers that we've been talking about, but professional carers. And we don't ensure that they've got proper qualifications. There's no register for carers. There is a register, you know, for doctors and nurses and midwives, not register for professional carers. And I think there should be one. I think there should be a special minimum wage for carers. We've argued for them £2 an hour above the national minimum wage. Because, and as you said, they can go and earn the same amount of money at the moment in Tesco's or in an Amazon warehouse or whatever. But caring is so much tougher. Unless we value and pay carers properly, I don't think people like you and others who depend on that, those carers, will get the quality of care and the consistency of care. Because sometimes, I don't know if you found this, you know, you get a carer for 1 week and then they move and you have to get another carer. And, you know, when you've got someone who's got someone like your father has Alzheimer's, it's quite important that they see the same people every day.
Yeah, we actually changed care agencies at one point because they just kept sending the new ones in, because actually dad at that point was quite low needs, whereas it's like, no, we want someone to know him and build a relationship and have a small core group.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's how down to how they run things in the office. But I think one of the things that needs to inform this conversation is also, what does society and the economy lose by, for example, me working less than full time as a doctor?
Yeah.
You know, if
Absolutely. The
care was there and I knew that it was good care and I wasn't having to keep an eye on things. And for example, if I wasn't, you know, responsible for asking her attorney on first port of call, I could then be working 100% in the NHS.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I can't manage both of those. And the emotional stress on not just carers, but also family members of, you know, there'll be times he doesn't know who I am. And that, you know, the repetition of someone with dementia can really wear you down. And unfortunately for me, I then go to work and I see similar faces, yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, my heart goes out to you. Thank you for what you do as a doctor and obviously as a family carer. And thank you for making that point that if we got this care challenge right, and let's face it, we can talk about it for decades and not got it right. If you got it right, it actually would help the economy because people like you would be able to work more. And actually carers could balance work and their caring responsibilities better. And that would be good for the economy. I think it's a brilliant point, Kerry. Thank you very, very much. I want to go now to Holly in Southwark. Holly, what would you like to say?
Hello. I just first of all want to say thank you for, you know, always shining a light on this issue. I know we met a while back. We played beach volleyball with some other young carers.
Oh, you're a young carer. Yeah, you sound a young carer. Yeah, I wasn't that good at the beach volleyball, I have to say.
Neither was I. but I guess the issue that I wanted to bring to light, there's so many issues related to caring, but I think a big one specifically for young carers is educational kind of participation and attainment. Like research from Carers Trust, you know, as you know, is showing that young carers on average are missing a month's worth of school every year. Maybe that's to take their loved ones to hospital appointments or to stay at home, or simply because they're so worried about leaving the person that they care for. And of course, you know, the impact this has on kind of social development as well as educational attainment is so huge. And I mean, I grew up as a young adult carer, but
so Holly, tell me about your caring duties. What you do, who are you caring for, and what was it like?
I was supporting my sister, who had a range of physical and neurological conditions as well as sight loss. She went to a mainstream school, so we were in the same school, but sometimes I ended up supporting her, occasionally taking her to the toilet at break time and making sure that she had food to eat and stuff, because there was often a shortage of TAs. And, you know, I know that schools are so stretched with their budget, but
that's a lot of responsibility. And you were at school at the same time.
Yeah, so, you know, sort of in my GCSE years, sometimes at break time, I was kind of going and checking that she was all right, which is fine, but it gets to a point where, you know, I also had to run off to exams a couple of times, it was very difficult.
Did you get any support from the school?
I was really lucky. I had a really brilliant charity called Centre 33 who came in, and they ran a group, and we had a young carers champion in my school.
Fantastic.
Which I think should be in every school. I think that should be a national policy.
Absolutely right. Yeah. You know, I'm so pleased you called and make the point about young carers, because I've met a lot of young carers over the campaign that we've done, not just playing beach volleyball, but lots of young carers. And I'm just inspired by them and in awe of some of the amazing things that they do. And I think they do need support. And I think schools sometimes, some schools like yours sound like we're pretty good, but some schools don't even acknowledge that they have young carers. And of course they absolutely do. So we do need to do a lot better. And here's the benefit, of course, children will get a better education, you know, if they get that extra support and aren't burdened with the responsibilities. And you hear stories about, young carers coming to school late and getting put into detention because they were looking after their mum or dad, and schools not really understanding it. I mean, when I lost my mum, so I was 15, I went to my school and my head teacher, who was basically a nice guy, but he stopped me in the corridor and said, sorry to hear about your mum, Davey. We've never had orphans before. And I was a bit lost because I didn't consider myself an orphan, right? I'm afraid he could have had a bit of training about sensitivity and pastoral care and how you deal with people. There's so much in this issue, isn't there? So much in this issue. But thank you so much for calling, Holly, and the very best of luck and to all young carers out there. Let me go to Ernie now in Watford. Ernie, tell me about your experience.
Yeah, good afternoon, Sir Ed. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Good afternoon.
You know, just listening to you, I take my hat off to you. However, regarding my wife, who I looked after for 17 years with neurological problems, the problems were strokes, and then after the stroke she had brain tumours, then central lung cancer, adrenal cancer. That was, you know, I looked after her for 17 years until she died. However, I'm very surprised, actually, that, you know, that you I can understand, obviously, how passionate you are about social care in the community, and obviously you would like to see things improved. I can understand that, the same as I would. But the thing that surprises me with you is that between 2010 and 2015, you was a member of government in the coalition government, and you would be sitting around the cabinet table, I know you were, with Nick, David and George, discussing, obviously, all about the cuts. And obviously, you know, what I mean by that is austerity. Now, my figures in front of me tell me that between 2010 and 2015, when you were in government, the central grant was cut by 50% to local government. Now, you are aware, like I am aware, that once local government gets that funding, they obviously have to, you know, slice the cake up and where that funding goes to. Now, my figures tell me that when it came to things like public services, that was between 2010 and 2015. My figures tell me that local government then had to cut 50% off of social care in the community, which, you know, as I said to you, I'm quite surprised, really, that, you know, I do admire you for speaking up for social care like I've done for years and years and years, but I am surprised that you make no mention that, you know, you could have done something about it between 2010 and 2015.
Well, Ernie, listen, thank you for making this point, and you've clearly had a huge experience looking after your wife. 17 years, that must have been really, really tough. Let me answer your point, though. Listen, we had quite a lot of arguments around that cabinet table, I can tell you.
Yeah.
When you're in government with the Conservatives, who I'm afraid I used to fight every day in all the stuff I was doing, you don't always agree with them. And sometimes, unfortunately, they determine to cut local government. And you're absolutely right, we need to get behind local government. What I would say in my defence, though, is we did, and it was Liberal Democrats, ministers like Paul Burstow and Norman Lamb, who were the care ministers.
I've spoken to Norman Lamb.
Have you? Well, he's great, and he was key to the CARE Act 2014, and what we did was pass legislation.
Yeah, I know. I've spoken to Norman in the past, and I know how he blew the whistle, obviously, on what was going on.
Yeah.
Was it that hospital? Was it Gosport Hospital in Hampshire?
I'm not familiar with that detail,
Norman.
Ernie, but Norman is fantastic. And what he and the Lib Dems did achieve was this CARE Act, which had some benefit. I'll tell you what happened, though. After 2015, the Tories didn't implement it. And we reckon about 1 million people are not getting the care that they should have done. So there's two sides to that argument, Ernie. I do appreciate what you're saying, but I do think the CARE Act would be great if it had been implemented. So thank you very much for your call. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, standing in for James O'Brien on LBC. If you'd like to get involved in this conversation about care, you can call me on 0345 6060 973. But now to the news headlines with Amelia Cox.
A government minister says vaccine misinformation has become a big problem, but it's working with GPs to tackle the issue. It says young children in England and Wales will be offered a free chickenpox jab from January. Israel has declared Gaza City a dangerous combat zone. It means the Israeli military will no longer suspend fighting in the area to allow for aid to be distributed. A government minister has warned the closure of migrant hotels could lead to people having to sleep rough on the streets. The Court of Appeal could rule this afternoon on whether to overturn an interim injunction blocking asylum seekers being housed at one in Epping. LBC weather, rain in the southeast should gradually clear eastwards this afternoon. Sunny spells elsewhere across the UK with patchy cloud and scattered showers, a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
Right. Any chance you could give me a hand with dinner?
Sure. Think you can manage after Dad totally smashed it last night?
Of course. I've got a HelloFresh dinner coming up, so watch out.
Wow, this is good. We're on a roll this week.
HelloFresh brings the inspiration back to dinner time. Fresh ingredients, tasty recipes, and no more staring blankly into the fridge. HelloFresh. Nothing beats dinner time.
It's one of those meh days.
That's warm-ish, but you're still keeping a jumper handy. Time for a chewy getaway. Swap garden weeding for poolside reading. Checking the weather for checking your sunscreen. The local pub for a swim-up bar. That's more like it. With flights from London Gatwick, we'll help you find your holiday happiness. TUI, live happy. At all protected. T's and C's apply.
This is your business. This is your business supercharged with the help of Xero Accounting Software. These are your numbers. These are your numbers sorted with the help of Xero Accounting Software. This is you.
Hi.
This is you taking business where you want with the help of Xero Accounting Software. This is your business supercharged with the help of Xero and having your numbers sorted all at the same time so you can finally focus on taking business where you want to. Supercharge your business today with the help of Xero.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
This is LBC with Ed Davey. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Ed Davey standing in for James O'Brien on LBC. We're talking about carers and care. Had a WhatsApp from David. He says, "Hi Ed, thank you for what you do. We need to do more for carers as they save the government a fortune doing what they do and should be supported. However, sadly, where would the money come from?" Great question, David. Something I think a lot about. I've written about it in my book, Why I Care, Why Care Matters. There's a load of places. You say carers save the government money. I actually think they'd save the NHS. If you did care properly, whether it's social care or supporting family carers, the NHS would save a fortune. And you may have to make some investment up front, but I think it would boost the economy, actually. I think it would be really good and would more than pay for itself if we got it right, got the right ideas. WhatsApp from Alison. "As a carer of my granddaughter, what I find hard is how hard you have to fight for what's needed, such as DLA support and EHCP, etc. But also the long waiting times for assessment, appointments, etc. As to the stress of full-time care." I could not agree more. The stress of caring for a loved one is difficult enough anyway. And the bureaucracy you have to go through, it's just mind-blowing. And when I look after people in my area, in my advice surgeries, it's critical. I mean, let me give you an example. If you're trying to apply for disability living allowance for your child, or indeed personal independence payment, you have to fill in this form. It's pages and pages and pages. And you have to spend quite a depressing time saying how bad it is, how disabled your child is. And I find people really need help to do those forms because it's just so depressing. What I love is when carers help each other. Give you an example. In Kingston Carers Network, in my community, they organised a WhatsApp group for dementia carers, people who are looking after their husbands or their wives. And it's typically, you see a lot of loneliness in those people. And this WhatsApp group brought them together, and they were giving advice to each other about how to get around the bureaucracy, how to solve it. And it couldn't be cheaper than a WhatsApp group. And people ended up going out for teas and coffees and for lunches just to get out of the house. And it helped them help their loved one. And actually, it meant that the person suffering from dementia didn't end up going to care home so quickly. It saved the taxpayer a load of money. Just that simple thing of trying to help people, help each other to get around some of this bureaucracy. So there are some good stories out there. Let me go to a caller now, Bob, who's ringing from Belgium, from Spa in Belgium. Bob, bienvenue. Bonjour.
Hi, Ed. Bonjour to you too. All the comments you've just come up with just ring so true. My contribution is that carers are probably the most productive people in the nation. Their contribution to the nation's economy is so overlooked.
Yeah.
You've got the accepted job description of carers for spouses, family members, friends, and that must save the NHS multiple billions, I guess. But then you have the carers, the pensioners, who use their pension working time as carers, childminding, for their offspring, so that they can both go off to work to keep their heads above water. In effect, it's taking three people to earn one living wage, and in some cases, still eligible for universal benefit. And you get all that 24/7 for 82 quid a week. That's a deal, isn't it?
Bob, everything you say is ringing true with the carers I've spoken to, but can you tell me a bit about your situation? And are you living in Belgium and caring in Belgium? Is any different there? What's your situation?
Well, before I came to Belgium, I looked after my mother for 6 months.
Oh, right. That was in the UK.
A relatively short period of time, but oh, my word, what an eye-opener. And the what you've just said about the books of pages of questionnaires you have to fill in. And all at that time, I think it was about 58 quid a week. It was ridiculous. And hats off to Age Concern and all the other organisations who helped me out doing that.
Well, listen, I'm glad you got some help, Bob. And interesting that your experience is rather similar to mine and to some of the other carers. Let's go to Colin in Medway. Colin, tell us about your caring experience.
Hello there. A rather depressing but needing to be had conversation today, and I thank you for that. So I looked after my late wife being an appropriate word, for loads of years. And if I had to do the same again, of course, without a minute of a doubt, I got offered the opportunity to become a paramedic. But that meant giving up my caring role. So I had to choose between my caring role, looking after my wife and kids, or my professional role. Of course, without any hesitation, your family has to come first, and that's what I did. I lost my wife horrendously to a heart attack in 2017. She died just like that in front of me, and it was heartbreaking. But, because all the benefits was in my wife's name, I rent my house, and I found out that the council was telling my wife had passed away. And rather than them saying to me, "We're very sorry," they said to me, "So the benefits have all stopped, and if you don't work, we'll take your house away from you." And it was word for word of what they said to me. They had no compassion whatsoever. I am now working. I've got a steady income, and I'm quite relaxed, happy, whatever word you want to use.
Good to hear that.
That does leave a lot of questions. So because I was a carer for my wife, obviously I wasn't earning. So my pension, when I become pensionable age, and I'm 51 now, when I become pensionable, my pension is absolutely zilch, because I wasn't working for so many years because I had to look after my wife. And what do we do in that sort of circumstance?
Such an important contribution, Colin, to our discussion. Thank you. What I would say is your point about when you suffer bereavement after you've been a carer, I'm afraid government, local authorities, they're just almost heartless. They don't recognise you're going through a bereavement, having done this incredible job as a family carer. And there's sort of no empathy, there's no patience. And I've had constituents who, a daughter comes to mind. She was looking after mum and dad in a council house, and she'd been looking after them for quite a number of years, saving the taxpayers an absolute fortune. And when they died, all the council did was write to them and say, "Right, we're taking back the property. You can't inherit the tenancy." They didn't give her, a year's grace to grieve over the loss of her parents and get herself sorted out. And I think we need to deal with bereavement as part of this whole issue. We need to look after people who've had these losses. And I'm glad that things have picked up for you now, Colin, but I think your experience is all too typical, really. Another caller, let's go to Sean in Esher, Surrey.
Hello, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
Good afternoon. I'm a carer for my wife, and I have been for 30 years. She has MS, and she's now at the stage where she's the latter progressive, where she can't walk and personal care. We got it 30 years ago, and she was brave, and she says, "You want a family?" So we had a daughter who had a stroke after three days. And then she was still brave. We said we'll deal with what we got, and we had another child who is nonverbal autistic. So that's the loading. And then we cracked on, and things come along. And about 7 years ago, personally myself, I had a stroke, which is no wonder. And then I got epilepsy, which is under control now. And latterly, I've been diagnosed with dementia, early onset dementia. So it's pretty tough in our house.
Sure, what a story.
Sorry?
What experience. I think anyone listening to you will just, our hearts go out to you. But, you know, continue. I don't want to interrupt you. We want to hear from you. You've had a tough time, blimey.
Yeah, I don't want sympathy. I have sympathy, and I'm grateful for it. And we've stopped worrying, because worrying gets us nowhere, so we just have to crack on.
Crack on, that's right.
Yeah, that's it. That's all we can do, and it's tough, and it's getting tougher, and I'm obviously going to be not here for or compass mentors for too much longer. So we've got to worry about, you know, my son and my wife, and so all we're doing is trying desperately to work out some way of making a plan for the future, but... No, not many doors open, I'm afraid.
Yeah, listen, I hope if you need help, the local council, your local MP, reach out to them and see if they can help you. I mean, my heart particularly is, I've got a son, he doesn't have autism, we don't know what he's got, but he's basically nonverbal, and my wife actually has MS as well. So I really do hear the challenges that you face, and... just reach out to others to see if there's help out there that you can get, because you absolutely deserve a lot of support. So thank you for your call, Sean, and for sharing your experience of you and your family. I'm going to read a WhatsApp now from Shibley in Primrose Hill. The use of the word productive by that caller, Bob, in Belgium is very interesting. One of the reasons unpaid family carers become invisible to society is because they do not contribute to the GDP, so are therefore rated unproductive and inefficient. Nothing could be further from the truth. I applaud you. I was a family carer for my late mother with dementia for 6 years at home during the pandemic here in Camden. Shibley, thank you for that. Do you know what? I've seen some estimates that if you valued care and carers and what they do, our GDP, our national income, would go up by a third. But the economists don't value care properly, and guess what? That's why I think we don't think about it enough in our debate, so we really should. So thank you for all these calls. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC. More of your calls on the way. The time is now 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Asma Mia.
A new combined vaccine against chickenpox, measles, mumps and rubella is coming in January, but vaccine levels are dropping. Would you get your child vaccinated? And if not, why not?
Asma Mia on LBC.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, the Lantis Financial Services.
Hey, Mum. So, you know we met Zara, my financial advisor? Yeah, from St. James's Place. Well, she drafted our plan so you can get that bungalow near me. Oh, and Sam, that lovely carer we found, will drop in. And I can bring over my signature shepherd's pie. Hoi!
Big decisions call for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production six-form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production six-form course at globalacademy.com.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play!
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What?
Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist.
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville, made to be enjoyed, not endured.
Leading Britain's conversation with Ed Davey on LBC.
You're listening to Ed Davey on LBC. We're talking about care. I'm hearing that a number of you are messaging in, but you're finding it challenging to call because you're caring. And you know what? That just rings so many bells. Carers are juggling so many things. I don't think that's always appreciated. And I'll give you an example of some study they did for young carers who, you know, juggle things as well, juggling education, looking after their loved ones. The research shows that young carers are brilliant at time management. They learn those skills. They're better than their peers at school because they have to be, because they're trying to do the study and do the caring for their mum, dad, brother or sister. And carers are have so much pressure. And I think unless you've done it, you don't appreciate how much stress, because you're seeing your loved one often in difficulties. So that's a big part. But if you are trying to get ring in, do try, because we do want to hear from you. And talking of which, let's hear from Sal in Paddington. Sal, what's your experience?
My experience is that the DWP needs to be broken up into several sections, and you need to remove this constant idea that productivity is only through work for those of us who are disabled. The systems don't work. I ended up in a situation where I lost where I was living and I lost the ability to actually continue my part-time job because of a healthcare provider providing a report that was inaccurate, that then meant that I lost my PIP. Because it was the gateway benefit, I lost everything that was attached to it, meaning I couldn't continue going to work because I couldn't afford to. I couldn't continue paying my rent. And I spent a year waiting for a tribunal. When the tribunal found in my favour that there had been a gross error of judgment and decision-making, I got the backdated. Well, that's all very well and good, but that doesn't get your job back or your home back. It had a terribly negative impact on my health, only to then find that the same report that had been superseded by tribunal was sent as part of the evidence pack for the next time that I had a review, because the Department for Work and Pensions does not update the healthcare providers with anything, any information to do with tribunals, because it's seen as non-medical information. It's seen as administrative.
So, I took this to the
independent case examiner, which took 2 years in order to actually take a look at the case.
You know, I couldn't agree more about the DWP. I've fought for a number of my constituents who've had, real challenges, a bit like yours. They're all different. And I particularly want to take your point about carer's allowance. There's been a real scandal about the way the DWP have gone about processing and administering carer's allowance. They've gone after...
When they make a mistake,
yeah,
it's fine, they will deal with it. If someone else makes a mistake, it's seen as deliberate and it's seen as a cheating of the system, which is an outrage, because their mistakes can impact our lives.
Absolutely right. They chase carers for alleged overpayments of carers' allowance just because someone has done a little bit of work and gone over the earnings limit by maybe a pound a week, you know? And they take the whole thing away.
It costs how many? £20,000 to actually chase them and the rest of it? They could just ask for a pound back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've raised this in Parliament, and there is a review of this way carers' allowance works, and we're waiting to hear the outcome. I'm determined to keep pushing the government so the DWP is held to account. And
the recourse we have to hold them to account are not good enough. When the independent case examiner's waiting time, just they accept your case before they even start investigating your case, it can be 2 years. If you're unwell and you're having to deal with all of that with nothing coming in, you are reliant on, basically, charity of family, friends and neighbours, if you have a network of friends and family, which some people do not have because they have been very ill for a very long time.
Absolutely right. Thank you for that. I think it's really, really important contribution. I'm going to read a WhatsApp now from Steve. He says, councils need to take social care back in-house. Care can then be managed centrally in a carer's profession like nursing setup. Presently, there is no level in the care sector, so many senior carers are paid the same and not much more than new starters. I think that's a really valuable contribution. Thank you, Steve. WhatsApp from Claire. My son Jack is 13 and has Duchenne muscular dystrophy. I hope I read that right, muscular dystrophy. There seems to be a lot of activities for neurodiverse children, which, of course, is fabulous, but my son has a physical disability and nowhere seems to cater for him. We also live in a rural area, so I have to travel miles for any activities and appointments. Don't get me started on getting any equipment for him. Claire, listen, I do relate to a lot of that. If we can help you, do write in. Really happy if we can support you or link in with your MP, whoever he or she is, to help you. You're right, there are a number of children, young people who don't fit into the boxes or aren't part of a broader group of people, and it can be challenging to find things to help them. I certainly find that with our son John, because he's has no diagnosis, there's no label, doesn't fit into any group, and sounds like you've had similar experience. WhatsApp from Sue now. Dear Ed, thank you for this conversation. So much empathy with you. I too cared for both my parents and disabled brother with cerebral palsy. I'm a retired nurse and fully aware of how much dedication, blood, sweat and tears experienced by family carers who deserve special consideration for their needs, mostly the finest social care possible. We have to elevate the status to professional, elevate the training and pay. It's absolutely scandalous and it's not already the case. I've witnessed appalling care. Sue, I couldn't agree more with those sentiments. We've really got to work on this. You know, I think if we don't get this right, the NHS isn't going to improve. And, you know, people do talk about social care rightly. We really need to get social care right. But they miss out this family care bit we've been talking about today. And I really worry that the government aren't focusing on this enough and aren't moving quickly enough. And therefore, we won't get the improvements in the NHS that we all desperately want. I don't know if you know, we haven't talked about it in this hour, but the government set up something called the Casey Review by Baroness Casey, who's reviewing social care. But they've said you've got 3 years to report. And you know what? There's been 25 reviews and commissions and inquiries and select committee reports since 1997. We don't need a 3-year review like the government set up. We need to get on with it. And if we got on with it and in the right way, I think we could really change things. I'm actually quite positive we did the right thing. But it does need quite a shift. And I think the Treasury is a barrier to change. Any Prime Minister's got a really put pressure on the Treasury to move. And the Treasury's got to have explained to them, we need to, it's not just about money. Actually, we can, if we change the culture of how we care and think about caring, we can do this not for huge amounts of money and actually much better outcomes. I'll give you one example in my own case. A lot of people basically said we should wrap John up in cotton wool. And that was the best way, and, you know, we just manage his disabilities. We were very fortunate to get some help from people in Hungary who had a very different cultural approach, and they basically said we should, you know, stretch John, push him, get him to do things, even if it meant a bit of a risk. And we've done that, and I'm so proud of my son. He can hold his own weight. He can stand up. He'll fall over if he's not got some support because he can't walk properly, but he can hold his own weight. And I can't tell you how important that is. You know, we're striving for him to be totally what I call toilet independent, so he can go to the toilet by himself. He's doing pretty well on that, and he's been known to get up from the table and use all the handbars and almost drag himself to the loo and put his pants and shorts down, but he still struggles. But that's the sort of goal that we're trying for him. But it's requires a different approach. And in my book, Why I Care, I talk about this cultural change of attitudes, attitudes to risk, attitudes to triumph, attitudes to poo. Sorry to be so brutal about it, but unless we are bringing in a different approach to these the challenges that all carers face, we're not going to get the right answer. And that would be a disaster, because I just think if we get this right, it could be transformative. So millions of people would have a much easier time caring, a much happier time caring. The people that are looking after their loved ones would have a better experience. And those of you who aren't carers would get a better deal from your NHS, because the strain would be taken off the NHS. All those people who end up in hospital for longer than they need to because there's no care home bed or support at home, they would be able to get out of hospital, freeing up space. We could get the waiting list down. You know, all these comes together, but it only starts if you really start with the family carers, the people who really know their loved ones. And they, in my view, they get shut out of the conversation by people who just look to the state, look to the central government for solutions. And really, they should start with ordinary people. They have done, they do an amazing job, and we should back them. Now, I hope you've been enjoying the show. You've been listening to me, Ed Davey, on LBC. Thank you for all your calls, your WhatsApp today. James O'Brien is back from Monday. I'll be listening. He's such a great presenter, isn't he? Coming up and four on LBC is Ben Kentish. He's in for Tom Swarbrick. But next, standing in for Sheila Fogarty, is Asma Mir, the great Asma Mir. So I'm sure you're going to look forward to her.
Thank you very much for that. What a wonderful adjective on a Friday afternoon, Ed. Thank you very much. I'd love to have a conversation with you one day about caring. It's something that's affected my family too. Now, the government is going to combine a vaccine for chickenpox with the MMR jab from January. They say it's dangerous for kids and can lead to complications later in life. But vaccine uptake has been slipping recently. It's around 83%. That's the lowest level since 2010. Will you be getting your young children immunized? Have you had the vaccine, given the vaccine to your children? And if not, why not? Let me know.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Israel's Prime Minister says the bodies of two hostages have been recovered in Gaza. The IDF is ending humanitarian pauses in fighting to allow aid to enter as it declares Gaza City a combat zone. LBC's correspondent in Tel Aviv, Blake Sifton, has more.
Military has confirmed that they've recovered the body of a hostage named Ilan Weiss, as well as remains of a yet-to-be-identified hostage. They say they're doing forensic analysis now to find out who that is. They were recovered in an operation by the military and the Shin Bet. They didn't specify where in Gaza that was.
The Court of Appeal is due to decide on whether to give the government leave to appeal an injunction on an asylum hotel in Essex. The Home Office is seeking to challenge the temporary ban granted to Epping Forest District Council for the Bell. The health minister has told LBC that anti-vaccine misinformation has become a big problem. Stephen Kinnock says work is underway with schools to tackle conspiracy theories, with the uptake of jabs well below target levels. Young children in England will be offered a free chickenpox vaccine from January. GP Dr. Sarah Jarvis has told LBC there are real risks if children miss out on immunisation.
People go, oh, well, I don't want to give my child the vaccine because I am terrified that by doing something to them, in other words, giving them the vaccine, I am going to do them harm. People have to understand that by not doing something to them, in other words, choosing not to give them the vaccine, they are actively putting them in harm's way.
A 76-year-old man charged in connection with children becoming unwell at a summer camp in Leicestershire will go on trial in January. John Rubin is yet to enter a plea on child cruelty offences where sweets were allegedly laced with sedatives. Eight children were taken to hospital and later discharged in July. And the government is facing growing pressure to protect creative industries from artificial intelligence. They've been accused of legitimising wide-scale copyright theft by failing to stop AI firms collecting content without permission. The Musicians Union says it's becoming an existential threat. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 20 points at 91.96. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain in the southeast should gradually clear eastwards this afternoon. Sunny spells elsewhere across the UK with patchy cloud and scattered showers, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Asma Mir.
Good afternoon. This is Asma Mir sitting in for Sheila Fogarty. I'm here till 4 o'clock. Sheila is back on Monday. It is 4 minutes past one. Welcome to the programme. A really full programme today. We're going to start. We're going to talk about vaccines. At 2 o'clock, we're going to talk about misinformation. And at 3 o'clock, we're going to talk about the difference it makes or it can make to older people if they get a diagnosis of autism. I know that that is what has happened in some people's cases, and it's been life-changing. So we're going to start, of course, with vaccinations. But I should also say we are expecting maybe around about 2.30, maybe 3 o'clock, the judge is expecting to rule on whether to overturn a temporary injunction to block asylum seekers from being housed at the Bell Hotel in Epping. So we'll bring that to you, of course, as soon as it happens. Let's start then by talking about vaccines. Did you know that 1 in 5 children start primary school unprotected from serious infectious diseases? Well, the government, you will have heard them this morning, is offering a combined chickenpox and MMR jab from January. But vaccine uptake has been slipping in recent years. I'm sure you know that. The WHO, that's the World Health Organization, says that we need to get to a level of 95% of children being vaccinated. That's where you reach herd immunity. You remember herd immunity, of course, from the coronavirus pandemic. Now, in England, it's nowhere near 95%. It is 83.7% of five-year-olds who have had both doses of the MMR vaccine. So 83.7% overall in England. In Liverpool, it's 73%. In London, it's 69.6%. So why is it so low? Why are we slipping away from anywhere near 95%? Why wouldn't you want to protect your kids from measles, mumps, rubella, and now chickenpox? Is it because it slipped your mind that you don't think measles or mumps is that serious? Or perhaps you have lost faith in vaccines? I'd love to hear from you, 0345 6060 973. And here's another question, of course. If you are hesitant to give your children vaccines for things like chickenpox and measles, would you be happy taking, for example, a weight loss jab? Do let me know. Speaking to Nick Ferrari at breakfast today, the Care Minister, Stephen Kinnock, talked about rising vaccine hesitancy following the government's chickenpox vaccine announcement.
It is a cause for concern. There's been a 10-year trend in declining take-up of vaccines, and I think, obviously, the vaccine hesitancy that came after the pandemic has definitely not helped. We are launching a range of campaigns, both national campaigns, public information campaigns, working with local public health authorities right through the country to explain the benefits, to explain that this is absolutely safe. The JCVI, the Joint Committee on Vaccinations and Immunisation, is a world-renowned organisation that has given this the full safety clearance. And we're also doing local campaigns. So we're targeting areas of the country. You mentioned Hackney. That is one of them, where we're doing these catch-up clinics. And we're working with local GPs and schools and public health authorities to explain the benefits. Sadly, Nick, there is a lot of disinformation and misinformation out there. People going on social media and talking rubbish about vaccines, and that is not helping. We are looking to combat that.
That is the Care Minister, Stephen Kinnock, talking to Nick Ferrari this morning. Let's speak to Professor Heidi Larson, who is founding director of the Vaccine Confidence Project at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
I'm sure there's more than one answer to this question, but if we need to get to about 95% of vaccine uptake when it comes to, for example, MMR, and in England, we're only 83.7%, and this has been a 10-year trend, why do you think that is?
Well, I think we heard earlier about the 10-year kind of leveling and slightly declining uptake. I think it's a mix of reasons. And just to clarify this, the 95% is really about measles, because measles is the most hyper-infectious virus of all the vaccine-preventable diseases, and that one really needs 95. Some of the others may need a little less, not to discourage anyone, but that one is the kind of the litmus test vaccine. So it's particularly important. And particularly when the MMR, the measles vaccines, is now bundled not only with mumps and rubella, but with chickenpox. Yeah. So it's a lot. So I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and there are a lot of young mothers.